Hoi, 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 cheeky monkeys.
Toppy,
toppy, toppy.
It's Burkamp.
Hashtag fuck Ellis.
That's magnificent.
Hello, John.
Up and out.
Well done. Bye-bye.
Hello and welcome to a Burkamp Wonderland. It's me, Josh, this evening, hosting our end of season review. Begrudgingly, we've got to do one of these to go through what was perhaps a car crash of an end of a season. But tonight I will be joined by, he's been to what, every single podcast we've done. It's Danny the GFP on the buttons. How's it going, Danny?
Hello, Josh. Thank you very much for being in control of this podcast, because quite frankly no one else wanted to. In fact, none of us really wanted to do this. In fact, I paid Sky to cut off my internet so I could have nothing to do with football ever again, but the buggers connected it again, didn't they? So after 2 weeks with virtually no internet and 3 weeks without a Skybox, I've got a new Skybox, 2 terabyte.
Wow. Cheers, Danny. And as you can hear coming in from the background, it's only the man that's going to keep us all in line with our language and with some sensible opinions, we hope. It's the Goonaholic. David, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you, Josh. Thank you for having me on the show again. I'm not quite so sure I'm going to be able to keep you in line. I'm not sure I won't join in with the language, because I'm imbibing as we go, but I need it. I've had a bad day.
Oh, I can't wait. And we normally have someone who's had a bad day when they come on, but he seems in a chipper mood this evening, presumably because, well, Carl can't upset his commute, so it must be Jason.
Hello.
How's it going, Jace?
How are you? Well, I'm confused. I was wondering when was the last time Danny had a new box before the Sky went?
We've been with it, 1989. So, and Josh weren't born.
Were you at Anfield?
So that's where I got it. So I had a new box. I won a surprise.
And if so, if you were at Anfield and you had your new box, who were you with?
I was with Charlie Nicholas. And we were high on crack. Sorry, Charlie. Well, an absolute lie.
I didn't know you were a Tory, Danny.
Well, you know, Lib Dems hadn't been invented by then, so I had to do with what I did.
Oh, gosh. And finally, the man who has been ruining Trump's trip to London by messing all the tubes up, Kyle. How's it going?
Why did you introduce me last?
I just felt like it.
What's different about me and everyone else here?
Danny, it's because you're never normally on time.
Danny, you learn more than anyone else.
What's that got to, no, Danny, I want to complain.
Josh, being on time.
Save the best for last.
No.
Save the best for last.
Government employee,
Okay, fine.
Your prediction. Oh, I dare to believe.
I've got insincere resting face, but Carl, it's because you're the best.
No, I'm just going to take out my frustration on Fife's journey tomorrow now.
No, he's not. He's busy in a month's time. Don't ruin it for him.
That sounds like a him problem rather than a me problem, to be honest.
Hey,
Carl, you're big my brother from another mother.
No, me and Fife are the best of enemies, I think, is. And it's safe to say that tomorrow at Canterbury, there may be a signal failure tomorrow.
Well, at least we'll have what we can only assume will be possibly the longest show we've done ever.
No, Chris ain't here, so it's fine.
That's true.
And didn't we go through the list of stuff we're going to talk about pre-season? It goes 22 game unbeaten, season ended. Good night, everyone.
I think that was more or less it. But should we start with the summer of last? Where everything was, you know, blue skies, happy days, ding dong, the witch was almost dead for some people, and Arsene Wenger had gone. Danny, do you want to go through some of the summer transfers we had, and who of that kind of group really excited you with their performances?
Well, if you want to go through everybody that came in, we had Marcelo Flores from Ipswich. He's a youth player. We had Joel Lopez from Barcelona, who turned out to be a very good left back. He's going to be a player to be talked about in coming years. Matteo Guendouzi from Leyton Orient in France, who sadly for Leyton Orient didn't get promoted from the Feeder League B, as no one is calling it, £7 million. Sam Greenwood from Sunderland, a forward, banging in loads of goals for the under-18s. A Lucas Torreira from Sampdoria for £26 million. And that was just before the World Cup. And we all remember looking at him at the World Cup going, my God, that's a magnificent deal because he was fantastic at the World Cup. And if we would have bought him after the World Cup, we'd have paid double that. Jason's favourite player, who's got a tattooed on the back of his shirt, is Sock Pappy from Dortmund. One of about 30 players we've had from Dortmund in recent years, £16 million. For me, the standout player of the new ones was Bernd Leno from Bayer Leverkusen, £19 million worth. It could have been a little bit more than that because you never really know, do you? And Stefan Lichtsteiner, I don't think he played any games all season. Free transfer from Juventus. He was laughing all the way to the bank. And finally, from Estonia, Carl Jacob Hein from Nome United. There you go.
Wow. Thank you, Danny. David, what did you think to that kind of group of players? We've brought in a more or less a new spine for this team to add to what Wenger had built on in the 24 years that he was with the club.
22, wasn't it? 22. But yeah, I'll take your point. I thought actually before we'd got the season underway, we'd done some quite smart business because I thought Sokratis was a really good signing. We needed a centre-half badly. The season didn't quite pan out the way I expected for him, but I still thought he was a good acquisition. And we never actually found anyone to play with him. And obviously, Lucas Torreira, I thought, was an excellent acquisition. He had an excellent first half of the season. But players from abroad do sometimes have difficulty adjusting to the pace and the physicality of the Premier League. And it looked like it caught up with him in the second half of the season. It's done it with players before, and they've turned out to produce their best again from season two onwards. And I'm pretty sure that'll happen with him. Matteo Guendouzi, tremendous prospect for the future, but he's got a little bit more to add to his game, yet certainly in an attacking sense as well, because he looks like he's going to be a box-to-box player. I don't think you're going to be able to restrict him to just a holding role. Stefan Lichtsteiner was... I wrote somewhere that I thought he disappointed as a player, but I thought he had great value as a free transfer signing in as much as he brought the best out of Hector Bellerin again, because Hector, after his injury in, was it 2016 or 2017, seemed to have lost a yard of his pace, which is such an important part of his game. And I thought the first half of the season before he got injured, he was absolutely back on it again. So that I'll give him the go. I was trying to think if he had, Bernd Leno, wasn't it? Bernd Leno got lucky because Cech started as the number one goalkeeper, got injured. Leno got in, didn't do an awful lot wrong, but I did do a piece before the Europa League final where actually he was accredited with being at fault for five of the goals we conceded this year, whereas Cech had none at all, according to the stats, if you believe in statistics. Overall, I think Leno was a good signing, but whether he's top notch, I think the jury's still out on that one. Don't ask me about the youth and reserves.
That's okay, because I saw, as soon as you mentioned his name, Jason woke up, I think, from a slumber. Jace, should we start talking about Pappy?
Oh, why don't we? I mean, look, I didn't like the signing. I overreacted to it, in all fairness, at the time. And I was harsh on him. He's turned out to be a good pro, but not a good centre-back. That's 51 games, 51 goals conceded in the league, getting sent off at Barty. 10% of the Premier League season banned in the, in the Chelsea game, second game of the season, you saw who's the boy? Who's the Spanish striker they had?
Morata.
Morata just fly past him, and Morata's not got pace. And you in the cup final against Chelsea, you saw him shoot out of the line to Mark Mithinair. He's a bad player. He's a good pro, but his time is done. I'm sorry. Dave, me and you are poles apart on this one, and somewhere in the middle will be the truth, no doubt, today.
Hey, this won't be the first time tonight, and it won't be the last.
Exactly. Yeah. To be fair, look, you can't knock Sokratis's attitude. You can't knock his willingness and his vigour for the fight, but he's not the answer for us. And, whatever, he's bang average, and that's being kind. Guendouzi,
I was going to say he's 22nd in our yellow cards for the season. Matched with the man you're just about to talk about, Guendouzi. Both have 12 yellow cards from the season and a red.
And this is the thing about Guendouzi. I like the potential. I think he's been massively over-egged. He is 19. I would have hoped that the coach and his coaching staff would have given him a little bit more guidance. He needs to spend less time on the floor and more time with the ball at his feet. He's a really nice footballer. He's got that potential to be box to box, but he doesn't get beyond the ball. He likes everything in front of him, but he's going to develop. I think it's a nice signing, really good value for money. Torreira started okay, came into it. End of the season, he fell off a cliff. But again, he's come from a far slower league. And, you know, it's going to take a season, as Dave said, for him to acclimatise. Lichtsteiner, I think he may have been good for the dressing room. Unfortunately, I thought he'd do a job on the pitch, but he really hasn't, unfortunately. Age has caught up with him. Leno, I think he's been fantastic. You know, it's not a bad summer transfer window, in all fairness. Two good young midfielders who are going to grow and develop in the team. A good keeper who's going to grow and develop with the team. The defenders, well, you know, yeah, not great.
Would you say that's based on the system they came into, new manager? Because we did see they both like a tackle, don't they? And they both like the dark arts.
Do you know what? It's one of those, okay, if you watch Socrates' performance against Tottenham, magnificent. He was magnificent against Harry Kane because Harry Kane doesn't have any pace. Well, you go through the Premier League, run through to 20, and all these teams have got pace nowadays. He can't handle it. He's at the back end of his career, to be fair to him. If he could play Harry Kane every week, he'd be a man player of the season every season. You know, because he's got his number. You know, if he loves, you know, a Troy Deeney or Harry Kane. Guendouzi, he's enthusiastic. You know, I'm not too bothered about, he's still learning, but I'd like him to stop rolling about on the floor so much, to be honest. That's my one thing. You know, the Palace game, him and Wilfred Zaha having a lying down competition so you can con the referee was a bit unedifying.
Carl, what did you reckon to the summer business?
I wasn't that impressed because I felt like we strengthened in the places that we needed to, centre back. I felt like we needed a second one, but we never quite pulled the trigger on the second person. Like Jason, I remember seeing Socrates at the first game. I think we played the friendly at Barnet. And I remember, yeah, the turning circle of like a double-decker bus. Because I remember there's one Barnet player that went past him so easily. And I was like, flipping hell, is this what we've got to do this season? And, you know, maybe I sort of based my whole perception on that one game. And as the season went along, he kind of grew on me because I felt like he was a centre-back that we needed. You know, the person who can do a bit of the dark arts. And I felt like Arsenal as a football club were too nice. We were too friendly to people. We're too, you know, someone fouls us, we kind of just like, oh, okay, no worries. And we don't do the, you know, fouling on the halfway line just to stop the break up the attack. That's not something that we did. And Socrates came in and did that sort of thing. And it was nice to see. Lichtsteiner, from the get-go, I didn't like him. And I'm not just saying that, I genuinely didn't. I thought it was far too old. A lot of people were saying, oh, it's fine, like he's going to push Hector Bellerin in. I think I'm going to differ with Dave here. I don't think he did, because I don't ever think that Bellerin was under threat. Lichtsteiner was never the player. He's never the solution for me. I think that I can't think of a game where he caused an impact. I can't think of a game where, oh, he literally really played well. He didn't. He was literally a stopgap. He literally was. He came in when on games when Bellerin was injured, and then we found out that he wasn't that good, and then that's when we started playing Ainsley Maitland-Niles because he literally wasn't good enough. And whether he was injured, I kind of beg to differ, because there are many times he was on the bench, but he wasn't the answer that we needed. And okay, he's gone now and it is what it is, but I just felt like that was a waste of money. And I know we'll probably get onto wages a bit later, but that was something that we didn't need. Torreira, excellent signing. We needed, we've been crying out for this quote-unquote defensive midfielder for about 5 years, and we finally got one now, and it's something that I think is a very good signing. I think that he will, if he gets a proper midfield partner, I think he'll be great for us. He just needs a partnership, whether that is Xhaka, whether that's Guendouzi, whether that's another. He will be a very good player for us. For me, Guendouzi, the jury's out for me. I don't like him as much as other people like him. And I know he's only 19, and I know that he's still learning the game, but I personally don't think he's as good as people are making out to be. I think he runs about and tries to make a tackle and everyone's like, oh yeah, he's brilliant. I don't know what he brings to Arsenal. He has maybe, what, 2 assists for the whole season. He has 1 goal. I genuinely don't know what he brings to the Arsenal squad. We need to decide, one, what his position is. Is he a box-to-box? Is he a deep line? Is he an attacking midfielder? What does he do? Because for me, he runs about a lot. Brilliant. Well done. But run about for what? You're wasting energy doing what exactly? So the jury's out for me on him. And for me, the sign of the season is Bert Leno. Like Dave said, he came in when Cech was injured and he made that spot his own. So credit to him. He's made some brilliant saves and he has made some mistakes. But for me, he's definitely our sign of the season because I think he's come in, done really, really well. And he will be our number one for, I personally think, many years to come.
Nice, thank you very much. One of the things you said, Kyle, on Lichtsteiner not pushing Bellerin, one of the interviews that I remember seeing early in the season was that one with Hector and Lichtsteiner, where Lichtsteiner goes to Bellerin, what are you talking about when we're talking about competing, that your only goal is to make sure he's first choice? Why not think about the whole team and that we're a partnership, we work together? Do you think it's that kind of off-field stuff that he's brought to us rather than his on-field performances?
100%. I think that, for me, he's brought his experience to the club, definitely. You know, he's a seasoned professional and he can read the game and he can help the younger players of the squad. Definitely, that sort of thing is invaluable. I truly do think that, because Hector Bellerin would definitely come out of the interview thinking maybe just a little bit differently. But for his on-field attributes, which is why we bought him, or it could have been a bit of both, but I personally think we bought him for his on-field attributes. I just think that, for me, he didn't fulfill what we wanted. And we knew he was never going to start. He was always going to be come in, give Hector a rest, you know, maybe playing the Cup games, maybe playing the Europa games. But I think we quickly found out that he just didn't fit into our squad. He is very, very slow. He can't cross a ball. He marks fresh air. I can remember a couple of games, and I'm sure he played against Man City, where they just literally raped our right-hand side and just gave away the ball so much. So, but yeah, for his professionalism, absolutely brilliant. I think he's, as a coach, you could tell he probably would be very, very good. But as a player, no, he wasn't the one for us.
That's fair enough.
I think you might mean that he exposed our right-hand flank.
Yeah,
that's the one. I think that's the one. That's the one I was looking for. I just think that, I just think that I can't, like I said, there's usually a standout game. Like someone says, oh, I remember when he played brilliantly that game. Or I remember, you can only think of the negatives. And I know it's human nature to always think of the negative attributes to somebody. It's just the way we are sometimes. But I just think that, and we'll get onto it, but I just think that it was a waste of funds personally. And yeah, it was free, but it's never free when you have to pay someone's wages.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's one of those that, we got a lot of value from him off field. And I think that change, the change of mentality that we've got to have at that at the club at the moment as well, I think he's been one of the key initial components of that, pushing through and almost making it, from what it sounds like, less of a boys club and more of a professional football team, something where they're kind of teaching the rest of the players how to deal with having this kind of coach system rather than a manager who deals with everything.
Yeah. You look at it, a lot of people have taken the mickey out of Lichtsteiner. You know, put your medals on the table. He's got enough league titles, hasn't he? You know, he's been there, he's done it. We've just caught him at the wrong time. A couple of seasons earlier, we'd have had really good value. Unfortunately, there's a reason Juventus let him go.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're talking about, as Carl said, it's human nature to look at the negatives, and we've got to start the season, and they started with two losses. Danny, you want to talk us through kind of with Man City and Chelsea as our opening fixtures, baptism of fire for Unai Emery, really, with those. In terms of expectations on those games, I think everybody here thought, you know, no expectations, we'll see what happens. But the performance is said otherwise, right? With the, especially the Chelsea game.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to get two really tough games, it's going to be Man City home or away, and it's going to be Chelsea at their place. And that's two really hard games to get in as a new manager. Plus, we had players at the World Cup that didn't come back. And we had Maitland-Niles playing at left back because Monreal was injured. And then Maitland-Niles got injured. And then Lichtsteiner moved over to the left-hand side and he was playing there. And then we had Cech playing only a handful of games that he managed to play in the Premier League before he got injured and lost his place. And then even Chris, who knows his French football, even he wasn't expecting Guendouzi to get anywhere near the first team until about Christmas, I think he said. And for him to be starting in midfield with Xhaka ended up having to come off and Ramsey came off. And it was just a really tough baptism for poor old Unai. And he said Unai there. No, Unai. Yeah, and I didn't expect anything from that game. And then we went to Chelsea. And I think the Chelsea game, we were really unlucky. I mean, we come back from 2-0 down to make it 2-2. We did. We scored a couple of goals before half-time. Mkhitaryan had his one good game of the season. The season before that was the game against Everton. And again, we had Torreira come on. I think it was just after half-time. And that one, a little bit more hopeful. You thought, oh, this is looking pretty good. I mean, they scored really a lot early on with Alonso and unpronounceable. And you thought, that's it. It's just going to be just like the Man City game. We're going to get absolutely hammered. But I think for me, that showed a little bit of inspiration from the manager and the team. And we saw him doing his tinkering because he's the modern tinker man, isn't he? And then they scored in the 81st minute with Alonso and it was all over. But yeah, it's really. I don't think, looking back at the shows we did back then, I don't think we really expected too much from any manager when he starts a new job, let alone with a couple of games like that.
Yeah, absolutely. David, with the start of, you said, those two games, we saw, as Danny alluded to, the kind of tinker man nature. And what did you think of those kind of half-time substitutions? Because I think that was a proponent for the whole season, wasn't it? That we saw these coming out time and time again.
Yeah, he got out of the habit because I think it eventually was starting to be seen by people as an error of judgment by him and his starting selections. But I thought it was fair enough in those first two games, in all honesty. I'll disagree with Danny on one point. I think when we were coming into the start of the season, Chelsea and Manchester City had far more players at the World Cup than us. They went further than ours. And I remember there being some optimism about playing them the first two matches. But of course, it was ridiculous. But we were never going to beat Manchester City. Chelsea, Dan, is absolutely right. We were desperately unlucky that day. And it wasn't a surprise when then we went on the run thereafter. But yes, in those two games, I too was surprised that Guendouzi started ahead of Torreira. But Torreira was just coming off the back of a good World Cup as well and having to adjust to a new team, a new language, a new league. So that probably made a bit of sense. But it was an unfortunate start. If we'd got the result we wanted at Chelsea, we'd now be in the Champions League.
Yeah, absolutely. And if we'd got the result at Man City, we'd all be in a, like some form of Anderson shelter, avoiding all the Liverpool fans. So there is some good that has come from that first game. Jace, you were radio hosting those two games, I believe.
We were
all bright-eyed and bushy-tailed at that point, right?
I got to be honest, I was really positive about those two games. I thought we could do something, you know, more out of hope than anything. City were just ruthlessly efficient with us. But I thought the performance, yeah, you could see it's a new coach coming in. He's finding his way. I was a bit confused by his lineup that day, but we saw him going for the press. He really went for the press that day. And unfortunately, that fell off as the season went on. In fact, it fell off the very next game. You know, we pressed in a different way. But I thought, you know, City, fair play, they're a better team. They beat us. Chelsea, I was frustrated with us because we missed a hatful of chances. As good a team as Chelsea can be on their day, we missed a hatful of chances. And you have to put that down to the players. You know, the coach set the team up in the best way he thought at the time. Unfortunately, I think Aubameyang missed a real sitter. I think that was Lacazette as well. But, you know, we could have drawn or won that. We had enough chances. So even though we lost, I was quite lifted by the performance more than anything, you know. But, it was to lead on to good things, to be fair.
Yeah, and Carl, finally, your thoughts on that couple of games. And then, as Jason's alluded to, the unbeaten run afterwards. It was 22 games we went on after that. Should say that wasn't in the league. Solely in the league. We also include cup competitions in that.
Yeah, I mean, like everyone here, I think we're all in agreement that we was never, I think, even though it was that game was at home, we was never going to beat Man City. I think, like David alluded to, they're far too efficient. They're a very, very good team with very, very good players with a very, very good coach. It would be extremely hard for us to beat them. And like Dave said, again, they had players at the World Cup and we had players at the World Cup. Theirs went further and we still couldn't, so I don't take that as an excuse as to why we didn't win the game. They were just very, very good. Chelsea was a very missed opportunity, you know, coming back from 2-0 down and then a hat for the chances that we missed, and you know, the game was kind of there for us and we just didn't take it, and unfortunately, yeah, this is the way it kind of panned out. And then we went on our, like you said, our 22 game unbeaten run. And you know, just to put into context, and I don't want to put it down, but some teams we beat, it was West Ham, Cardiff, Newcastle, Wolfsburg, Everton, Brentford, just to name some of you. And those are the games you really need to win, you know, because ultimately some of the games are just, teams are just mentioned are some of the teams we dropped points to in the second half of the season. So, you know, we won those games and everyone, it was a good mood factor. Everyone around the Arsenal Football Club were thinking, oh, we're picking up points, we're climbing up the table, or we was keeping pace with some of the teams that were in front of us, you know, the likes of Man City's and the Liverpool's, because we weren't too far behind them. You know, we was making progress in the Europa League and, you know, we wasn't playing our first team, but we were making, you know, we were winning games, and that's what we want to do. We was winning games. And as the 22 game unbeaten run, you know, it carried on. I mean, we drew with Crystal Palace away. I remember beating Sporting away. And I remember drawing with Liverpool at home. And those were games where you kind of like, you know, we've got a bit of momentum. And you're thinking, we drawn with Liverpool away. At home. And you're thinking, are we actually going to do something here? Because the belief starts coming in. You know, you start thinking, we haven't lost a game yet. We're playing well. And you think, we're doing so good. Like, no matter what you think of who the teams that we played, like I said, I mentioned the teams that we played. What the hell was that?
That was David just mentioning Spurs. Spurs was in that run.
Yes, they were. Yes, that was probably my game this season. And, you know, I remember beating Spurs and then draw with Man United 2-2. You know, it really carried on. And then we went to Southampton. and it came to an end, didn't it?
Yeah. The problem was, sorry to cut in, the problem was throughout that unbeaten run, we never quite got performances right. The first really good performance was against Leicester. Okay, and for the first half hour against them, they played us off the park. And then it was the Mesut Ozil show where he turned it on. I thought the Liverpool game, we performed really, really well. I thought we were the better team, but they created the better chances. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. A draw was a fair result. It could have gone either way. And then you saw the Tottenham performance, where first half we started well, then they came back into it, and then second half we blew them off the park. But we never put a solid string of performances together. And that was kind of the worry. You know, I remember talking to Dave. Dave, we spoke on one of the podcasts. And, you know, great, we're not losing. And you've got to give the boys credit for, you know, grinding it out. But when are we going to see a string of performances? And unfortunately, that never materialised until the latter half of the season.
But can't a caveat that I'm devil's advocate. The fact that we weren't losing games. Yeah, because I remember being on with you, Jason, thinking that our performances are not very good. We're not playing very well. But at the same time, we were playing, I remember saying this to you as well, we're playing badly, but still winning games. So, and I remember saying to you, imagine when we start playing well and we're winning games, because you can't have it all your own way all the time. And for me, it was the fact of, you know, yeah, we're playing badly, but we're still keeping up with the teams that were above us at the time. You know, like I said, the Liverpools and the Man Cities, and we were keeping on the same tally of points with Spurs as well. Because at that time, I'm sure they were above us. And then when we beat them, we went 2 points ahead of them. That I can remember.
That's right.
Yeah. But so
that kind of thing, though. We, you know, as long as you're not losing, okay, nobody's looking at the negatives. But to improve as a team, you have to analyse the negatives and iron them out and eradicate them and build upon it. And, you know, I saw the second half of that Tottenham game, okay? And that setup, we didn't use again then for months. We didn't use it again for months. And that's got to be down to the manager, okay? You know, where we lost it was the things we did really well, we didn't replicate ever. You know, he'd chop and change a lot of the time. And I'm fine with people being tactically pragmatic and tactically flexible. That's fine. But when you've got something that works, you have to replicate it and build upon it. Do you know what I mean? I don't know. What's your thoughts on that, Carl? Because I didn't think he ever gave us the chance to gain momentum and to gain, you know, that those patterns of play in place to really build upon them throughout the season.
Because he was the new modern-day Tinkerman. And for me, it almost seemed like, and we'll probably get into this again later, but it almost seemed like that's the time he's kind of proving his point with Mesut Ozil, wasn't he? Because Mesut Ozil wasn't in the squad. He took him out, and it's almost like, I don't need to use you. There was a point where I think, at that time, Aaron Ramsey had decided that he was going to leave, and he wasn't using Aaron Ramsey. And do you remember he came on? Did he come at half time against Spurs?
Yeah.
That I can remember.
The contract negotiations weren't decided at that point. Yeah. Okay. But that was only come January. But he came on that second half. And
he changed the game. I remember he changed the game. Absolutely. And that's what he needed. I think that was then the catalyst for Unai to say, I need to use this guy, whether he's leaving or not, because like I said, it's still in negotiations, but I think behind the scenes, they probably already knew that he wasn't going to stay. And I think that was probably the catalyst, thinking, oh, I've got an actual really good player here. I need to start playing him. And the manager, for me, everyone was like praising. Every time he used to change it at half-time, everyone was praising, oh, look, he's changing it. Oh, it's brilliant. But why didn't you get it right from the start? That was my issue with Unai Emery. Like, if you had got it right from the start, you wouldn't need to change it at halftime. And yes, you know, it doesn't always work from the start. I get it. But the fact that you didn't know he never knew his first team. I said, even now, if Unai Emery had a fit squad, every single player was fit, I still don't think he's got a first team. I still don't think he knows who is his best 11 at this present time.
Is that the imbalance in the squad? Because we are top heavy, aren't we? We are top heavy from a striker point of view.
So I think he found his best setup, but the problem was he's only got certain players who can fulfil roles in that setup. You know, we were wanting, myself and John spoke a lot throughout the season of a flat back for, you know, get runners going and what have you. And then he found the Ramsey Xhaka midfield, you know, where we've seen that before. Okay. And it worked for us. Dave, I don't know, do you want to comment on that?
Well, I was just making a general point about the whole thing. We had, during that first half of the season, much had been made of the amount of physical work that we were doing in training that we didn't do under Arsene Wenger. And you made the point earlier about how we were playing the high press in those first two matches. I think that got carried forward into all of the matches, but only against the top six, because our performances, particularly at home, against Tottenham, against Liverpool, against Chelsea, against Manchester United, the players bust their guts in order to get those results. And I think in the rest of the games, we didn't bust the gut and we didn't perform the same high press, and we allowed teams to expose the weaknesses that we had in the end game of Arsene Wenger in a long simple ball over the middle unhinged us defensively. So I really would like to know why we were so motivated for those big six games, but not the others. That was my point.
Would you say, David, that's a man trying to learn the league? And from where Unai's managed previously, you know, Barcelona, La Liga with Sevilla, you know, you've got Barcelona, Real Madrid, you know, the big teams, and you know, the smaller teams around you are less about thinking how you're going to beat them, because it should almost be inevitable when a side of Sevilla's or Valencia's side turn up. It's not necessarily they roll over, but certainly at PSG, where he's had two seasons, laziness can come into that, and he doesn't necessarily prepare for those teams like he would. You know, even ask any fan, you can name the top five teams in the Premier League. Everyone else, do you pay as much attention to them? And is that something we've seen him still been a problem this season? Because I don't think he's ever rectified it.
Fair point, and it's one of the lessons he has to learn. I'm sure we'll talk about his future as we go on with the show, so I'll shut up at that point.
Well, interesting point there, Dave, about our production and ability against our main five rivals. We got 10 points out of 15 there against them at home in the league, and the only points we dropped was three against Man City, and we dropped two against Liverpool in a very close game. That was the 1-1. And then you look at our overall home and away against our six main rivals. We've got 12 points. Last season, we got six. Season, we've got about nine. Go on. Dave?
And like Leicester at home and Fulham away were the standout performances other than that. Mm. But you're right. It was mainly we played our best performances against the biggest clubs, and they were the best games to watch at Highbury. The rest of them, it was...
Yeah. The time that Leicester won the league, we beat them home and away in two magnificent games. So it's definitely, it does make you wonder what's going on. It makes us frustrated. If you're able to do that against them, again, look at Wolves. Wolves smashed everybody in the top half of the table. They lost all their points against teams in the bottom half of the table, but that's their first season in the Premier League. They haven't been in it for every single
Great
season.
Point.
So it's definitely a bit weird, Josh.
Yeah. Huddersfield took 6 points off them. And that tells you everything, I think, about Wolves. But Danny, we're going to talk about small teams as well. The Europa League run. Do you want to talk us through who we got in the group stages and how we swatted the various farmers of the...
So yeah, I could be a bit funny here to talk about the pointlessness of it. But you look, Smith Rowe, he played magnificent, and Willock got some games, and the amount of decent young players have got their chance. And that is the only decent thing about that, plus the run we had of clean sheets, which I think most of our clean sheets this season came in Europa League. So in our first game, we beat Vorska 4-2 at home. Then we went to Baku Most of us went to Baku. In fact, all everybody apart from one player person went to Baku. We beat them 3-0. Then we went off to Sporting Lisbon with a really good 1-0 win and drew 0-0 with Sporting Lisbon at home. And then went off to Vorskla, beat them 3-0. And then we had Karabag come to us and we beat them 1-0. And then we played Bati Borisov. It's lucky, but carry on going through the rest of these.
Yeah, I mean,
chat when you want me to stop.
In terms of the things, we can go through some of those players as well. What did you think of Joe Willock? Because I think last season he almost flattered to see if we heard big things about him, but he seems to be just a bigger player in general.
He is someone. This season he's played 346 minutes, covering six games. I've never been overly impressed with him, apart from, I think, one of the last games of the season. It might have been the one at Burnley or some one of those ones. I remember thinking, yeah, this is the kind of player, but he's in that stage of his career. He's only 19, where he's like Maitland Niles. What position are you going to play in? Because when you get the chance as a young player, you play where you're told to play. You'll play where you're needed. That's why Maitland Niles has never played at right back before. He's always a right-sided midfielder or a right winger. And he started the first game of the season as playing at left back. So these players, I don't really think you can judge them. It's more been involved in the first team, getting your chances, getting the minutes, showing that you're willing to be a part of the team and play wherever you're needed. But Joe Willock, I don't ever think I've seen him play a magnificent game. There might have been another League Cup game last season, but he's not been as impressive when he plays as the likes of Smith-Rose had.
He got two against Blackpool.
Yeah, three all season.
Yeah.
You can say something, David?
Joe Willock's cameo in the Europa League final. He was superb.
Yeah, that was another. Maybe that's what I was thinking, one of the last games of the season. I think he came on and he did more in the first 10 minutes than a certain German had done for the entire game. But we're not here to have a go.
Don't start that one. I'll have you.
we'll come to Mustafi anyway.
Yeah, then we played Bati Borisov 1-0 at theirs, and then we beat them 3-0. No, we lost 1-0 at theirs, beat them 3-0 at home. And then we had those infamous games against Rennes when we lost 3-1 at their place, and we thought, that's it. It's all over. I mean, they were just magnificent against us, and they came to us. We smashed them 3-0, and from that point, we smashed them 3-0. We were magnificent in the Europa League. We won every single game after that. And I thought, that's it. We're about to win it. How can we not win it? Didn't win it.
Cheers, Danny. Jace, we're talking about the Europa League and some of the players that we saw and some of the youth players coming through. Was there any performances in particular that you thought were like a shining light for those players in the Europa League?
I wouldn't say shining light. I thought they were... It was an opportunity to give the youngsters a go. I was surprised how little opportunity he gave some of the youngsters, you know. That we didn't really, you know, in previous years under different management, we've seen a lot of younger sides go out, and especially against opposition like that. You know, as Danny said, Emil Smith-Rowe was impressed, but, you know, he's at a young age and the level of opposition wasn't great, even though Bate beat us. You know, I thought Willock looked like he was developing quite nicely. Like Danny, I hadn't been impressed with him in previous seasons when he'd come on. He looks as if he's grown up a bit, you know, filled out a little bit, and he looked a lot more comfortable on the ball. And he looked to have a bit more intent about him. We saw a fleeting glimpse of Saka at one point. I can't remember when, but he looks exciting. Other than that, is there anybody else we saw? No. So, you know, as for developing young players, he's not done it this season, really. You know, even after Joe Willock played well against Blackpool, when was the next time he had a game? Emil Smith-Rowe, putting him out on loan, I totally agree with it. Think the boy needs regular game time and a real challenge to develop. Fantastic. No problem with that. But we've not seen youth development from Unai Emery this season. And anybody thinking they have is kidding themselves. It's just not happening. You know, Nketiah. How many starts did Nketiah get?
It's true. Would you put that down to Unai trying to still learn his team? And if he actually knew everybody in the squads, and especially the first team, he'd be able to take those, not necessarily gambles, but switch them out because he doesn't need to learn how, say, Aubameyang is as a player for him on the field.
This is how you turned up with detailed dossiers. If he doesn't know what Mesut Ozil is now, then he's in the wrong job. Do you know what I mean? If he doesn't know what Mkhitaryan is capable of, then he's in the wrong job. You know, I mean, yes, there's a couple of players, etc., and getting your defensive setups right. But the Bate game kind of showed us up for where we were. Do you know what I mean? And I know it was a difficult night. I know it's a horrible pitch. I know it's miles away. But, you know, I didn't see some of the reasoning behind it. You know, there's no need to sort of crucify the guy for it. But, you know, for all the talk of youth development, it didn't happen. And the bloody nose we got a bad date we fully deserved.
David, do you have something on that as well?
Yeah, I think I hate to hark back to the last manager, but I think there is a benefit to playing a number of these lads together because they've grown up together in these cup ties that you think you can win. Now, it came unstuck a couple of times, most notably at Sheffield Wednesday that night in the League Cup. But generally, the boys did a good job because they felt comfortable around each other. It was a gentle introduction to some of the first team squad players around them. And I thought we were getting somewhere. This season, we've tended not to play too many of them at the same time. And so they're coming into a team with players, all right, they train with, but they're not used to playing with. They're of a different era. They'll have a real laugh with Aubameyang and Lacazette, but you can't imagine these guys having something in common with the Lichtsteiners and the Mustafis and the Koscielnys and the Monreals of this world. I do think there is a future for us developing a group of set youngsters together. And I'm hoping, the second point being, that the promotion of Freddie Ljungberg next season is to achieve precisely that, so that we do bring forward the players he has been motivating in the under-23s this year, because we're saying they're young, but, you know, some of these guys are 18, 19, 20. Cesc Fabregas was playing at 16. You're looking for players to be almost the real deal by then. That's my sixpenner.
As you say, at 19, 20, they're the same age as Sport Guendouzi. And he's not set foot in the under-21s league this season.
Exactly.
So, Carl, what did you think of our Europa League run? Obviously, it was always ended with a bitter taste in our mouth. But in terms of performances, we saw Bert Leno start as well for Arsenal. He made his debut, didn't he, in the group stages?
Yeah, I think that's where he kind of made his name and then obviously made the league position his own. I hate to say this, and I think it's horrible to say, but we didn't win it. And we've gone all the way to the final for what reason? It does leave a bit of taste in my mouth. I think we had some good performances. I definitely do. The Valencia game was very, very good. The away leg, I think it was one of the best games that I've seen, you know, contender for game of the season up there with the Tottenham game. Some of the games were not so good. Some of the games were very, very boring. Some of the games I stayed up late to watch and it was kind of, what's the point? I think during the group stages, it's kind of just a run around, isn't it? It's kind of like the D Cup. You put your kids out, see what they can do, because I don't think there's a fear of losing to Carrier Bag and the rest of them. And I think that, you know, maybe it's even a chance for our strikers to get a whole load of goals. You know, if you can put Aubameyang against like one of those Carrier Bag teams and he can score a hat-trick or get two, you know, it gives you confidence going into the league game. And, you know, if you're in a rich vein of scoring form, then it helps. You know, the bittersweet thing was the final. It's just, we didn't play well. It was horrible. It was not good. And all of us here are testament to that. I'm sure every single one of us watched it and all the listeners watched it. And I just felt deflated, I think, because we was in it. We was playing well. First half, we was there. And then, as Arsenal do, we collapsed. You know, we conceded a goal and that was it. That was it. We just, our heads dropped and well, we all know what happened, so there's no point going over it right at this moment, because I'm sure we will talk about it a little later. But yeah, we just did what Arsenal did. But yeah, I'm happy that certain players got a run out. I'm happy that we got to see some of the youngsters, and like Jason and like Dave said, I hope that we see more of them next season.
Yeah, Danny, if I remember rightly, this early centre-back pairing for the league and for Europa League, we saw in Europa League the Greek duo of Mavropanos and Socrates.
I believe in the first few games.
In the first few games in Europa League.
Holding and Socrates were in the first one. And in the second one, I've got to refresh the page now and it's changed it. In the second one, the first one against Vorska, the second one away at Karabag, it was Socrates and Holding. And then the third one away at Sporting Lisbon, it was Socrates and Holding.
Ah, well, then I've obviously imagined Mustafi. So I was just about to come on to Holding as well, because he got injured in the December of that. What do you think of the impact of that? Because it started to see that Mustafi-Socrates partnership that gained so many devout followers, should we say, for maybe all the wrong reasons.
Yeah, he managed 16 games all season and 1,300 minutes, which is at that point when he got injured, he was one of our first names on the team sheet. Whether we were playing three at the back, whether we were playing five at the back, yeah, three or five at the back. And he was the player that we'd all seen his performance with Pear in the cup final against Chelsea, the FA Cup final. And we all thought, wow, this boy has got a future. He's only cost us £5 million from relegated Bolton, who got relegated into League One. And it was... is what we'd always wanted. I mean, there was comparisons already at such an early age to the likes of Tony Adams and Martin Keown and all those legendary Arsenal players that are centre-backs in English, and his stature and the way he just wants to carry on, and he just gets stuck in with everything. And I really liked I think it was a perfect partnership with Pappy, because Pappy could then stay back and do the dark arts. Meanwhile, Holding can just stay back and do all the clearing and all the other stuff that he was good at. But he's just constantly evolving as a centre back, and you could see learning the dark arts at such a young age. I mean, we go on about the dark arts quite a lot, but it's good. You need to be able to, even the slightest little things. Like, I remember one of the Dave Healy used to say that when you'd found someone, you'd go pick them up, you put your arm out and you squeeze the underneath of their arms, or you'd stand on their foot as you lift them up just to wind them up a little bit more. And we all saw what Holding had done against Costa in that FA Cup final. It was magnificent. And he started the season. I hadn't expected him to be a regular starter for that season, but it was much like Guendouzi. I think the manager had seen something in the pair of these young players and thought, that's it, you're going to be my one of my first players on the team sheet all season. And it was looking so good up until, was it the Man United game he got injured in? Did he get fouled?
Oh, no, there's a question. It was his knee, and I've got it on the 5th of December.
The Rushford challenge.
Oh yes,
the
Rushford
challenge. It wasn't a good challenge. It wasn't a good challenge either.
But he was. When he comes back, he's going to be the linchpin of our defence. Because I don't think there's anybody on the pod tonight or any of the listeners that have got anything you automatically think negative about Holding. Whether it be Koscielny, you think injuries. Where you think Pappy, you think like Jason said, missed 10 games this season from just being a little bit mental. And then you think Mustafi, you think Ginger, so automatically he's a wrong one. And Mavropanos, who hasn't impressed me at all in any game he has ever played for Arsenal. He's another liability at getting sent off.
Harsh.
Maybe harsh, but he's got time. He's still only 21, but he's not impressed me the way Holding has. I'm going to shut up now, Josh.
No, I agree. And I agree with you. I think that probably Mavropanos' best performances were last season when he first arrived. I think this season he's come back from injury. He's not quite been at the races. Let's hope next season he is.
Hopefully, yeah. Yes.
Absolutely.
And Holding's got a big injury to return from as well. You know, and you've got to remember, on the back of that Chelsea game, he started season before last, really badly. Holding had a really tough time beginning of last season, but him and Chambers worked themselves into a nice central pairing in the League Cup and FA Cup and stuff like that afterwards, or the League Cup one thing and other games. But, you know, you've got to get... You can't put too much pressure on this kid. He's got a bit of nous because he's played in the Championship. You know, that's a really good learning ground for centre-halves. But you can't just, you know, put too much pressure on him. You know, he's got a big injury to return from.
Yeah, absolutely. And at the moment, there's still, I believe, an unknown return date for him. We've seen him back in training, starting to run. But, Carl, do you think he was, as we said, probably one of the bigger misses of this season? The other two being Welbeck and Hector of the big, big injuries we had this season.
Definitely. I think, personally, for me, Hector was the biggest miss of the season, because I think once Hector went, one of our attacking prowesses, and we know that Emre likes his wing-backs to attack. You know, that's something that he does, whether he plays a three or at the back or a four at the back. He wants his wing-backs to really push on. And I think once we lost Hector, I think we had to then try and find a different way to play, because we tried Lichtsteiner there and it didn't work. And for all his effort and for all his might, Ainsley Maitland-Niles is not a right-back. Ainsley Maitland-Niles is not even a wing-back. That's not what he does, but he got there, he played there, and he played very, very well at times. There were times when he didn't play very well. You know, I can remember the final, he didn't play well in that game in the first half, I think. I think he was getting exposed. I remember there's a game towards the end of the season, I can't remember which game it was, and he didn't play well at all. And I just thought, wow, you can just tell that he's not a wing-back. Holding going was a big loss, because then Koscielny then had to step up and play more games, and then Sokratis had to play more games, and then we had to start Mustafi playing more games, and then there were times when other people had to come in and play centre back, and Rob Holding needed, I think, that run of game just to, one, for his confidence, and two, for game time. A run of games does a lot for a player, and I think that he was coming in, the injury just came at a really, really bad time. It was just not nice. The Welbeck one was, it hurt, I think, because we didn't have another player in the squad that could do what Welbeck does. And a lot of people will say, well, what does he do? Welbeck is the player who will stretch a game. Welbeck is a player that will, 1 minute, he can easily play as a striker. Then you can drag him out and play wide. And I know people will say, oh, but Aubameyang can do that. He doesn't do it as well as Welbeck. He doesn't. Aubameyang is someone who should play up front. He shouldn't play wide. That's just my personal opinion. And because when he came back from the World Cup, which I feel was weird, Welbeck played, what, maybe 10 minutes in the World Cup? He didn't get much game time. And the fact that when he came back from the World Cup, he didn't go straight into the team was, for me, very, very weird, because I think Emre almost made up his mind before we saw him play. Because you think to yourself, someone like Welbeck should have come in and should have been up there with him. It's, for me, it wasn't very, very good what Emre done with Welbeck, and then he started to play him, and then he got the injury. It's kind of like it just came at the wrong time again. Although there is no good time to get an injury, and there is no to be honest, but I think Emre didn't play him for whatever reason. He didn't, and it's stupid, because like I said, he didn't have that much of a World Cup. He didn't play that many, so he should have came back fresh. You know, he didn't have a pre-season like the rest of the squad, but you'd have thought, oh, he's come back, he's relaxed. And I don't know what happened, but Welbeck for me was a very big loss.
Yeah, he played 600 minutes for us up until he got that injury. He had 5 goals and a single assist in 17 appearances. That tells you how, as you say, how sparingly he might have been used, with 600 minutes across 17 games. Shows he's 14 games. He was in the squad 17 times. But still, it's a low conversion rate at that point of him coming onto the field, and the amount of minutes he's getting. David, as you say, just Welbeck and Hector. Hector up until that point had 5 assists, and looking at people like Liverpool's fullbacks, easily can put those kind of figures into having a season like that. Do you think he was probably the biggest miss we had this season?
I think Hector and Holding together, because defensively we didn't improve. And I thought that was the main reason. And I know what Hector brings us in an offensive situation. But I think, as I'd mentioned earlier, I thought he'd return to his best in doing both parts of his role. I thought Holding and Socrates had formed a very solid partnership, albeit forced by the injury to Lauren Koscielny. And whether they would have survived as a partnership when Lauren returned, I'm not so sure, but I think probably they would, given the way they were playing, because they were the principal part of the defence in that 22-game run. Danny, I slightly disagree with Josh in that I would not ever start him ahead of Aubameyang and Lacazette if both are fit and both are available. But I do understand that we did miss him when one or other of them wasn't around, and we missed him when we needed to make an attacking change to games. And we didn't really have that option. We didn't utilise Nketiah properly until the end of the season. And I think Danny was talking earlier about a standout performance at Burnley. That was Nketiah. He finally looked like the player that we had hoped he would be a couple of years ago when he got those, was it two goals on his debut in the League Cup against Norwich?
It was indeed.
I think it was two.
Yeah.
For me, definitely Bellerin and Holding, huge misses this year. Danny, we could probably have covered another way a little bit earlier.
Yeah, Jace, do you have something on the other two as well?
Yeah, I got to be honest. I totally disagree with what everybody said. Okay. The biggest miss of the season was Ramsey at the end of the season. That coincided with the dip in our form and us missing out in top four. That's where it's killed us. The injuries to Holding and Hector were horrendous, and Danny Welbeck is horrendous, and it cost us. But what's actually cost us top four is Aaron Ramsey getting injured, because we were in our first spell of good form throughout the whole season by utilising him in that role as a B2B midfielder. And he strung together the midfield attack and the defence, okay? And him and Xhaka were forming a nice little partnership as they had done previously. And that's what's killed us. And you can see that in results. The other point is, okay, and this doesn't go for just Danny Welbeck. This goes for Mohamed Elneny as well. If you're not going to use the squad, don't piss and moan at the end of the season that your players are burnt out. You've got top quality players in different positions and you're not utilising them. That is the mismanagement of the squad. And Unai Emery has nobody to blame for us falling off a cliff than himself this season for the way he hasn't used the squad properly. Yes, you want to use Alexander Lacazette, and yes, you want to use Aubameyang. But if you do want to utilise your press in big games and you do want to manage your squad's fitness through to the end of the season, you have to use Danny Welbeck. You have to use Mohamed Elneny. And don't fucking moan about Mohamed Elneny being shit when he's had 2 minutes of football all season, then you throw him in at the deep end. It's not on. And the way, you know, us as fans and Unai Emery himself has treated some of these players is a fucking disgrace. Absolute fucking disgrace. And there's a rant over. Sorry.
Right. I know, it's all right.
Fair point, so.
I was going to say, on Ramsey, is that one of the reasons why we're looking to get... We've let him go. Because you've got a player that, yes, changes us and makes us infinitely a better side, but he's unreliable at being with us. You know, we might have brought him back early, and that's mismanagement at the club. And to be honest, if we can't manage a player and bring him back in time, and it ruins, why have him?
To be honest with Josh, okay, if you look at the sequence of events that led up to the injury against Napoli, okay, he tweaked his hamstring against Watford. Right? Did they pull him off straight away? No, they left him on for a bit. Then they took him off from Mahavir, okay? And then he played him against Napoli. Should he have played him against Napoli? I don't know. I haven't got the medical data, okay? But then a month later, more of the spin city. On Ramsey, you know, he insisted on playing against Watford. Well, you fucking dropped him for half the season, mate. So why now all of a sudden do you give in to him demanding to play? It doesn't add up, mate. It does not add up, Unai. You're full of shit, mate.
It doesn't make sense for me, because we ain't Chelsea. Our players don't dictate when they will and won't play.
Exactly.
So that Yeah, I kind of agree with you, Jason. No player can go to manager. I mean, he can go to the manager and say, I'm fit.
Yeah.
But he can't say, I'm fit, I'm playing. That doesn't make sense.
And you've seen him have a tweak, and then you play him the next game. Well, you played him the next game because you're desperate. Because you now realise who, you know, the players that your form hinges on. And you know, if you hadn't made a rod for yourself so early on in the season, you wouldn't be in that position. And that's the frustrating part, Josh. You know, it happens. Managers make mistakes, not as many mistakes as players make, okay? But you can't serve up some of the crap football that we've served up all season, claim to be pragmatic, let in 51 league goals, lose away to Bartley Borisov, lose away to Rennes, okay? When it comes to the crunch, you're in pole position for top four, and you fucking bottle it, and then you go and bottle a European final. It's sometimes, okay, the blame lays that squarely where it should do with the coach.
Well, you need a mic drop, really, Jace, but we haven't got you one.
It's too heavy.
Tell me that's a perfect segue into the next part of the discussion, Josh.
It is. I was going to throw another bit of coal onto the fire because Jace is already heated. So I thought we'd talk about Denis Suarez and the winter window.
No, I wasn't thinking that at all.
No, where were you, David? Where were you thinking, David?
I was thinking the Unai discussion.
Oh, we could go Unai. Well, I think they go hand in hand, don't they? Denis Suarez and Unai. So why don't you kick us off with Unai? You know, we've seen him for a whole season. Now, we have mentioned the Europa League final, and Jace has brought up the league run-in. We did feature in other cups. We got knocked out by a couple of teams. We don't want to cover those two teams particularly. No. So, yeah, David, Unai, his first season and your thoughts?
I have to say that I think I said at the start when he was employed, you need to give the guy at least 4 or 5 transfer windows. I've not changed my view in that regard. I don't think he's had a great season, although perhaps a victory in the Europa League final might have changed my view. That's how shallow as we as fans can be. But, you know, what Jason was just ranting about, I agree with 95% of it. But I don't think, you know, someone said we're not a Chelsea. You have got to give the guy time to put his team together. So he got 5 players last summer. I'm not altogether sure they were his 5 players. And the Sven Mislintat story is a whole other thing. He was put in place by Ivan, and let's not even go there. But I think Unai Emery has got us playing very well in the big, big games, as we mentioned earlier. I think he's being less than motivational when we're playing the lesser lights. And the players got us that 22-match unbeaten run because they realised suddenly what it was like to be an Arsenal player. And because we had so many changes, we perhaps ran out of a bit of steam in the second half of the season. That's no excuse for the results at the tail end. We're an unfortunate refereeing decision away from winning at Wembley against Tottenham that would have put us into the Champions League. We have ourselves to blame for not beating Brighton, Crystal Palace, Wolves, the like. So I am kind of with Jason as much as I think he was to blame for us not achieving this season. But I think we should give him another 12 months and give him this summer to grow his squad, which is going to be a little bit more difficult. But I think we've got a little bit more money around than some people are saying. And I think he will do some horse trading as well. You have to give the guy another 12 months. I think he's only on a 2-year contract, isn't he? So it's not going to cost us anything to get rid of him next summer if it all goes tits up. But it just feels the right thing to do to give him another go. Some people disagree, some people agree. Let's just be positive about the guy and hope that he's learned the lessons.
Kyle, Mr. Positive, What did you reckon to Unai?
I can't believe I'm going to say this, but I disagree with you, Dave. I do. What has Unai done?
You're welcome to, mate. That doesn't matter.
I can't. It hurts saying that. But what has Unai done this season? What makes you think that he's going to improve next season? Like, for me, he's done absolutely nothing to give me confidence to think, oh yeah, next season he's going to go into it well, because look how the end of the season finished. And I'm not going to base our whole season on the end of the season, because people can say to me, why don't you base our season on a 21 and game beat and run? Fair point. Someone can say that to me. But the collapse at the end of the season, for me, is unforgivable. It really is. The teams that we lost to, the way that we lost the Europa final. And you have to put that at the manager. You know, he puts out a team and he says, go and win the game. And I think, you know, the Crystal Palace game, he took the game way, way, way too lightly. I think he thought that because we was at home, we was just going to turn up and win. And we obviously didn't do that. The Wolves game was absolutely atrocious. I think it was probably one of the worst games I've seen. We just about beat Watford, and it's only because they had 10 men. Had Watford had 11 men, I would put my house down that Watford would have beat us, I'm very sure. Leicester was abject, absolutely atrocious. We drew again with Brighton at home. It's just ridiculous. I think that, for me, it's unforgivable. And I know we spoke about, we don't know how much money you've actually really got. I think we probably do have a little bit more than is being said. However, I don't trust him to go out and spend the money wisely. You know, I knew we don't know what's going on behind the scenes. We don't know who we are actually going to buy and who we're looking at. I know there's talk about sort of the two guys from Italy and the right back. We'll get onto signings a little bit later, but I don't see, for what he's done this season, that gives me confidence to think, you know, he's going to do better next season. I don't see how he's going to give us confidence to say, oh, yeah, you're going to do it. It's giving him four or five windows. And, yeah, you could look at Klopp and say, well, Klopp done it. And, you know, it was, look how successful he's kind of been now. But Klopp had owners that backed him. And again, we'll probably get onto this later, but Unai doesn't have owners that are going to totally 100% back him, because at present, there's no sign that he's going to have money pushed towards him for us to buy players, for us to actually strengthen the squad all over the place. Because let's face it, it's not just one or two players we need. We need about six or seven players in this squad. We're not going to get six or seven players. And that's fine. So you've got to work with what you've got. And
Carl, let me just say something. When you started your job, and we won't mention it again, but did you improve in the second year over your first year when you were learning?
I was as good as I am today. And Friday can
No.
No, you're right, Dave. I came in as a novice and I worked my way up, and that's fine. Unfortunately, we don't have time for that. You know, if we miss out on another year of Champions League, and I know we say this all the time, I genuinely think that would be detrimental. Now, we've missed out, what was it? Is it our third season not being in the Champions League?
Yep.
And we are so far behind, not just in funds as well. I mean, Jason said something in one of our groups, and he said, if we'd got into the Champions League and how we played, what's the point? Do you not think we would have been knocked out by the teams that we played? Like, we're not going to do anything in the Champions League, so what's the point of being in it? Yeah, for the money, 100%, we need that money, Champions League money, but as we're trying to win it, no, we'd just be a participant. That's all we'd be in the Champions League. So being in the Champions League just means nothing, because we are so far away from winning the Champions League. It's unreal. We are so far away.
Josh, we're a point away from a team that got to the final.
Oh, Carl.
Yeah.
Sorry, Josh.
Yeah. We are.
Really different. You know, we look similar.
But at the same time, you know, we go back a couple of seasons, 10-2 against Bayern Munich twice. that still, and yeah, you know what, different managers, different players, I get that, but that still sticks in a lot of people's memory, as in our last Champions League outing was us getting beaten 10-2. Have we really
Our last European semi and quarter finals, we've beaten Napoli and
Valencia.
Yeah, twice, home and away. That's the sort of form that can take you a long way in the Champions League.
Yeah, but that wasn't me in the WhatsApp group who said that. I'm not sure. I think it might have been John, not me.
Oh, I was thinking credit, Jason. You should have just taken it.
I don't see it that way, to be honest. Sorry.
Oh, okay. But yeah, I do think you're right. Momentum takes us far. You're absolutely right, Dave. But look at the final. The final for me was absolutely... was ridiculous. You know, we just collapsed, and it's what Arsenal do. So,
correct.
If we are that far away from Champions League, then why are we? Yes, I want to be in the Champions League because this Thursday nonsense is rubbish, and you want to be with the elite. You do. You want to rub shoulders with the best in Europe. But we are so far away from that at the moment. I think it's, and I know you may say, oh, we're only a point away because we just about lost out to Tottenham to get in there. But we had so many opportunities. You know, if Aubameyang had scored that penalty against Spurs, we would have been there. Had we beaten Crystal Palace, we would have been there. Had we beaten Brighton, we would have been there. Had we, you know, we had so many opportunities and we just didn't do it. So, I don't know. Yeah, so and that's all Unai. It's all Unai. For me, he picks the team. He says, go out there. This is my tactics. I want you to go out there and do it. And sometimes the players don't do it. And I understand that. But I wouldn't sack him, but there's no way on God's green earth. Because for the moment, one, you sack him, you have to pay him off. That's more wages. Then you have to look for a replacement. Again, that's more wages. I just don't feel confident going into the season at this precise moment. We could all change when we get a couple of signs. It could be like, oh my God, we signed this player, we signed that player. Yeah, you know what? We're going to go there. We're going to do well. But right now, it's really hard to gain confidence to think that Unai Emery is going to be the person to take us forward.
You made a great point there about if we sack him, we have to pay him off. If we sack him, we have to sign someone else and spend money. I'm not sure I have the confidence in the people who are running the club right now to make the correct next appointment.
Yeah, I completely agree with you there as well, David. Danny, with the, firstly, with your thoughts on Unai and the season, also we didn't get rid of many players in the summer. So do you think there's also a clear out, which is kind of skewing, you know, that alluded 40 million transfer budget? Because, well, how many players did we get rid of? Three?
The summer just gone?
Yeah, the summer.
It depends on what level.
Perez, Akpom and Joel Campbell? One of them would be first team.
Well, if you're ready. Josh Martin to Norwich. Zelalem has gone to Sporting Kansas City. Daniel Bardon, Norwich. Josh De Silva, Brentford. Mafidi went to Juventus. Joel Campbell, he was released. He went to Italy. Lucas Perez. Virginia is a really young, really good Portuguese goalkeeper. Got poached by Everton. Chupa Chupa went off to Salonika and did become an invincible. Jeff Wren, Adelaide, went off to France. A player to Southampton, another one to Celtic. Vlad Dragomir was released. He went to Italy. Jackie Wilshere went. Yassine Fortune went back to Switzerland. Tafari Moore was released. Keto released. Johnson, Haddar, Iwomia and Alex Cream all released. Bowler, Benson, Beckford released. Then Cazorla and Mertesacker. So I suppose it's Mertesacker, Cazorla, Wilshere, Perez, Campbell. And that's about like five players that you would consider first team players, but they had a hell of a clear out of the youth players, and I think we're going to see that again this season. And plus we had quite a few players go out on loan. But I agree with I think it was you, David, you were saying about that run in the Europa League. From the time we lost away at Rennes, those next five games in the Europa League, the Rennes at home, Napoli home and away, Valencia home and away. That was five of the most impressive games for us that I have seen us play. And that gave me so much hope. We had the 22-game run unbeaten, but there was loads of rubbish games in there. But you look at the way, I mean, the free kick from Lacazette to beat Napoli, that the 4-2 hammering of Valencia after smashing them 3-1 at home. And then you add on to that the way we played against Burnley. Burnley are no mugs at home. We went there on the last game of the season. I'm not telling you anything. I think we all know that's where we went. But Abuya Aubameyang played in that game. He was after everything. That is the kind of ability that our team has, whether it's under Emery or whether they're doing it together. But I think if you add back in the missing players like Bellerin and then Leno knowing that he's going to be number one and a few like Torreira are going to be playing there because Torreira lost it probably about two-thirds way through the season. Guendouzi fell out of favour as well. And the other thing we had the problem with was we all want Lacazette and Aubameyang to play, but I think it's shown beginning of the season, you play one, you bring the other one on. That's what we did against Spurs, one of the best games of the season. And as the season went on, he was getting more and more desperate to go, we can't defend, like you were saying, Jace, we can't defend. We're going to have to go out there and outscore people. And then we go on the break and then team would catch us on the break and then turn us inside out like Palace did. And then some games they would play both of them and they would do nothing like we did against Brighton. And so, like Dave was saying, there is some stuff there which gives me confidence for next season. But I think Carl's also right that we've got a two-year contract with him with an option for a third year that's up to the club. We can't afford to go sacking him, getting somebody else in. Then they'll want a whole load of money. And then they'll have a load of players that may be like Ozil and Ramsey that the new manager doesn't want at the club. We can't keep doing that. We're going to have to stick with what we got.
So, Jace, I think you're the only one that I haven't come to yet. On Unai, I think we've already got an idea from your rant where you might be. But I'm going to throw two teams at you. Chelsea and their managerial model, you know, 15 managers, 15 trophies. And then you've got Man United, who have, David Moyes' contract is still active this summer from when he signed his ex-Fergie.
That's harrowing.
Yeah, I know, right? It's a six-year deal they gave him. So at least we've only got a two.
I think you can look at other clubs' models, and I think that's where we always go wrong, okay? You've got to stick to, you know, you've got to forge your own, you've got to plough your own furrow, so to speak, and you've got to make it yourself, you know? We were lucky with the last manager that we had success instantly and, you know, it went on. Then, obviously, you know, we all know the history of it. For Unai, I do have some sympathy for him, okay? I do have some sympathy. It's not much, but I do have some sympathy. But where, for me, it falls down, I would sack him, okay? I have no problem with the club not sacking him. I have no problem with people thinking he should stay there. I see both sides of the coin on this, and I'll support him next season. As Danny always says, new season, clean slate, let's go, okay? But when you look at the whole, you know, trajectory of his career with us so far, is him and Arteta, you know, well, Arteta was the hot favourite. Unai comes in, wins the job. I thought brilliant. Experienced manager, knows what he's doing, knows how to win some trophies. This is exciting now. He comes into the club as the coach, not as the manager, not in charge of personnel, of buying personnel, in charge of making the best of what he's got. He's got detailed dossiers on the first team squad, the under 23 squad, all these players. So he's done his homework. He goes on then to not play certain players, to not maximize the potential of his squad. Okay. He then has a fight with Mesut Ozil. Now, I'm not saying he's wrong in that, but if his performances on the pitch, don't tell me Henrik Mkhitaryan was any better than Mesut Ozil. There's a few more goals, but he was just as abject throughout the season. There was a performance here and a performance there that covered it up, but I'm sorry, at times he looked disinterested. And trust me, you know how many after-match live shows we do. You get to see this in all its glory. But Mkhitaryan seems to get away with scot-free with it. You know, you can't... He didn't seem to treat the squad the same way, to me. I may be wrong in what I'm saying, and if people want to disagree, that's fine. But he knew, he had detailed dossiers on all the squad, and yet you want to play Aaron Ramsey 10. Then you're going to drop him. Then you're going to drop Mesut Ozil. Then you have no creativity. During the 22-match unbeaten run, the alarm bells were sounding. We'd say it in the live shows after the game, the lack of creativity, okay? The lack of fluency in the games, the how defensively frail we were. Danny talks about the Napoli game away. How many shots did Napoli miss? Napoli could have quite easily knocked us out at that point. You know, and I go back to this again. He's the coach. People say, oh, wait till he gets his squad. He's not supposed to be in charge of player acquisition. He's supposed to make the best of what he's got. Yes, I do think there's, you know, hierarchy at the club are partly responsible, okay, for this. And you see the briefing against, I know I'm a massive Ramsey fan, but unfortunately he's been the one who's had this. He wants Mesut Ozil wages. He wants this. He wants that. Okay, you know, you saw it all. Then Mislintat got it. He never, at any point, put together a coherent plan for the squad. Never at any point. Chopping and changing, firefighting constantly. The difference between Pep Guardiola, the difference between Jurgen Klopp and Unai Emery is that from day one of when they started their jobs at their clubs, they started work on a coherent plan for their teams. Unai hasn't done that. And that's why I get rid of him. Because I just don't think he's good enough. And yes, okay, if you've got to swallow the money, you've got to swallow the money. But, you know, what's worse than taking a hit financially is letting rot set in. And I don't have any faith in next season whatsoever. I'll support him. He'll get a clean slate. But honestly, I see us, you know, let's be honest, we're 1 point off top four, okay? But if it wasn't for the collapse of United, we could easily be sixth. You know, that's how much of a roller coaster that top six are at the moment. If it wasn't for Solskjaer, we could have been in trouble. You know, but ultimately, you know, you look at performances on the pitch, and if anybody's enjoyed the football this season, and you know, 10 games in, I was still really excited. I really was excited. But he's worn me down. And, you know, support him, fine, not got a problem with it. If you want to stay, no problem. Okay, I respect the perspective. But for me, I'd sack him today.
Again, sort of what you said, Jason, what's scary as well is we're talking about finances. Every team around us are going to be financially backed. Man City, they've already got a perfect team, but they're going to go out and probably spend the best part of 60, 70, 80 million. Man United are going to put at least 100 million into that squad easily, 100%. Chelsea are going to, well, they can't spend money actually, can they, at the moment? So, but they've got obviously 30 players out on loan. So all those players are going to come in and they're going to find a gem somewhere. You can't have all those players and not have a gem in the squad somewhere.
Sorry, pal. The problem I have with that is, okay, I think we'll spend 80, 90 million this summer. I really do, okay? But when you're looking at, okay, yeah, we all know a massive Aaron Ramsey fanboy, but our performances with him were far, far, far superior to our performances without him. And yet we're letting him go for nothing. If we'd have sold him, I wouldn't have had an issue. We've made a rod for our own back, okay? You know, Jeffrey in Adelaide, it may not have worked out for him with us. It might not have, okay? But, you know, he's done well this season. We haven't managed the squad.
Done okay. Three goals in La Liga, in Ligue 1, is not okay. A great season. It's nothing to shout about.
But, yeah, but he's about to have a transfer where, they're going to generate cash off that, okay? And look, I'm not saying, you know, he'd have done that with us or done well with us or not, whatever. But we know we've mismanaged the squads, and not just the last summer, but in previous seasons as well. You know, this has gone back a while. But ultimately, you know, the talk is that Unai's the one who made the decision. on letting a player walk for nothing who could have got you 30, 40 million quid bare bones? You know, these are the problems I have at the moment. And I don't think I'm being unfair.
The thing with Ramsey, though, as you say, is he the kind of guy that you sign him up for 4 years and then sell him immediately? Or just say, stick 2 years on the deal so we can get a transfer fee out of you? And is his agent the person that's going to do that?
Right. He'd have signed from all the talk, okay, right? But the bottom line is, you sign him up for 4 years and then you turn around after 2 years and say, right, Aaron, you are you still ambitious to play abroad? We'll give you a good deal, you know what I mean?
It's a case of now's your chance. It works in two ways, isn't it? You
know, we're the ones who pulled the contract and he'd have signed. And that's the problem I have, okay? Look at the end of season. Look at when he got injured. Look at our performances. And okay, if Unai's got a different vision for the team, that's fine. I got no problem with that. I don't. But it didn't seem to work this season, did it?
No, I think I agree with you with that one. That especially on the Ramsey point, I think there's no arguing with it that with him in the side, we saw consistently more better games. But that is one of the downfalls of having Aaron Ramsey, is that, you know, he only put in 2,000 minutes for us in the season, where a 3-8 is what we saw from Aubameyang.
Yeah, the problem is that's because he wasn't there
where he's dropped. But yeah, there's also that spell where he's injured. And if you if you want someone to be an ever-present to build a side around them, and
absolutely,
can you name anybody who is even similar to Ramsey that would come in and fill that gap of 35? And I think that's the problem, that we've got a player that is so good, but we can't replace him.
I think it's a fair point, Josh. But my frustration this season is Watford game comes off injured, chosen for Napoli. Do you know what I mean? Did he need to play him, or was it desperation? And then the briefing afterwards, he demanded to play. Well, you've had no problem dropping him throughout the season. So what's changed now?
We know many players
want to
play games, though. I know it's a choice of language. You've got the demanded to play or said, I'm fit to play. Now, it's one of those, you know, we all know our own bodies. And no scan will say, oh, this, you know, you could play with that little bit of cramp or that, or, you know, that little niggle. Yeah, you'll get through the game. And it just so happens.
But why bring it up then? You know, this is my point at the moment, is why bring it up then? Because...
Can I just butt in there, Jace?
Yeah, crack on.
Because there absolutely is a measure on whether or not they are close to not completing 90 minutes in a game. I've seen it at first hand, and they obviously felt that it was going to be okay. I'm like you, I think there's been a bit of briefing against him. Where you and I will differ is on the fact that he, and more importantly, his agent wanted to for him to stay. Let me just play the devil's advocate at the moment and say, it was understood when the contract offer was withdrawn. I think it was it September or October it was withdrawn? January.
Yeah,
it was because maybe his agent was still touting him around Europeans' big clubs.
But guess what?
He was not able to sign a pre-contract. And if he was doing that, with Aaron's full knowledge. And I get your frustration, and it's my frustration as well. I think we should have done more to keep him. But I think there's a little bit of something on both sides.
Yeah, I have no doubt that, Dave, okay? But, you know, agent tries to get the best deal for his client, shocker. You know, clubs tap up other players. We do it. You know, let's not be, you know...
Yeah, of course we do.
None of us are holier than thou here.
That's why we haven't complained.
You know, I'm just frustrated we didn't get money for him. You know, we could have sold him in the summer. We could have done a number of different things. But I'm more frustrated with Unai and the way he's managed the squad. Welbeck, Elneny, etc. Okay? And then it comes down to when, you know, you've got a clear point in the season where it falls off a cliff. You know, we did badly in January and over Christmas. And then he picks you-know-who. then we start to play well, then we get back in the contention, and then it falls off a cliff. You have to manage your squad better.
I mean, so if we shift this, say to last season or the season before that, we say this happened not in March, but in May. Not in May, but in March. We're looking at a problem this squad has had consistently towards the end of a season. We have fallen off a cliff in March and then tried to rescue it in May. And it just so happens that we've been okay up until we've just fallen apart later, and we've not had that, you know, that kind of April we always had under Wenger, where suddenly we went like a month unbeaten and we had superb runs towards the end of the season. And we were like, look at us, you know, calendar year, we were having superb runs. But I think it's a problem with the squad, let alone the man. What he's managed to do, actually, Unai, in this season, is extend that, you know, the wheels coming off for 2 months. You know,
like, we fell off a cliff in January. Let's not forget. Okay?
We've always had a dodgy December under Wenger. Always.
A couple of seasons. There's been
Brighton, Southampton. All.
I think. I think we've had a couple of bad seasons where that's happened. Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
But I think that's a lot of that is myth as well. Okay. But look, ultimately, with 5 new players in the summer, okay, we had a chance to get some loans in December, and we bring in Dennis fucking Suarez. Do you know what I mean? When any of us start a new job, once you've taken over, you can't blame the last guy for everything. Do you know what I mean? And he's a coach, not the manager. He has to make the best of his squad. And he didn't give Welbeck minutes.
Welbeck went out 9th of November. He's been out that long. And he's only...
Yeah, but ultimately before that, okay, you know, he hardly used him. Do you know what I mean? You only used him for Europa League, not in the league. And you've got to manage your squad's fitness. I just find it that's my view on it. And as I say, I haven't got a problem with people having a different perspective of it. But it's you know, it's really it's every man's decision that you're on this one, isn't it?
Do you think he always plays it safe? You know, the Denis Suarez signing, because he knew Denis Suarez, you know, he doesn't seem to want to go against players that he doesn't really know. Like, I don't think he really knew Danny Welbeck, so that's why he didn't really want to play him. You know, he doesn't know, he didn't know anyone in the squad. But for me, the Suarez signing was just ridiculous. Why would you spend all that money on wages and
£4 million?
And just the wages, it's the fee as well, the loan fee, to not play him. Like, surely you would have done your homework. If you get a player on loan and he comes to your squad and then you're like, oh, he's not as good as I thought he was, then where was the homework? What was you seeing in him that you thought, oh, I really need that player on loan because he's going to be the one to play in our squad? We all know reason why Denis Suarez came in, because that was almost like, I don't need you, Ramsey. I got Denis Suarez, and it just didn't work out. That's what my personal opinion was. It was to kind of replace, I know, to replace Ramsey, to say, I'm not going to play for the rest of this season. And it didn't pan out, and he had to play Ramsey then. Because for me, it's just ridiculous. And this is what I'm talking about, and what Dave said as well. I don't trust the people in the club to make good decisions, because that was not a good decision. So that's like I said, £4 million wasted. And it is. It's absolutely wasted, because we're never going to get that back. And that could have gone to something else. That could have gone to another player. Could have gone to
a centre-back, which we needed.
Yeah, and it's just ridiculous. For us, we knew that Holding had gone by then. He'd gone in November, wasn't he? So we knew we needed a centre-back, and we go and sign a centre-mid.
Those decisions
was ridiculous.
Yeah. The annoying part of it for me was you had so many people who watch a lot of Spanish football telling us that Denis Suarez is too lightweight for the Premiership. And lo and behold, he was. He looks a lovely player, but I think the Spanish league suits him a lot better. I don't know. I just found it bizarre.
So let's move on to some player performances as well for the season. Want to grab maybe like your hero and kind of villains of the season. We'll start with David. Villains and heroes of the season. On mute, David, or maybe Danny.
I'm here.
Oh,
I'm
you're here. On mute. You're on mute.
No, I'm here.
Oh.
It says, if I go and look, it says mute. It doesn't say unmute. Anyway,
okay.
This is getting better and better, isn't it? no, you'll not be surprised to hear I don't do the negative side of things. I don't do the players I don't want. Well, I suppose I have a little bit in as much as I've mentioned Lichtsteiner as a player tonight. I think we can do without him, and we'll put that to one side because I think he still did a job otherwise. In terms of the players who, the positives, my player of the year, I don't share the view that most others do. Jace will be delighted to hear I actually think it was Aaron Ramsey, because when we did play him, the guy made a complete difference to how we looked, regardless of whether we played with a three or a four at the back. He just gave us that something going forward that we didn't have. So definitely Aaron for me.
Excellent. Danny?
Quite simple for me. Vivian Miedema and Van der Vonk led us to the league championship for the first time in many years. And the Aussie,
good
the Aussie manager, there you go. Absolutely magnificent. The women have shown the men how to bloody do it. And the under-18s won the Southern League, got to the free play against the Northern League in the final. We lost the final to Derby, I think, or someone like that. But yeah, the women, absolutely magnificent. The rest of the men?
Good man, Danny.
Painful. Cheers, babe.
Carl?
I'll answer your question properly. Villain of the season, I have two. Mustafi, because I think he was a car wreck this season. I genuinely do. I think he is easily one of the top five worst signings of Arsenal in all time. And a lot of people would disagree with me, but I think he is absolutely, he's not fit enough to wear the Arsenal shirt. He's not good enough. And if he stays this season...
That's the World Cup winner, Mustafi.
Oh, here we go. Do you know what? Greece won the Europa Championship. Would any of those guys get into our squad? I very much doubt it.
They would nowadays.
Soccer. Well, probably now. Yeah, you're right.
I would. But I give you Johnny Jensen.
Yeah, that back four.
Bloody hell. Yeah, but for me, Mustafi, I think he is definitely one of the worst signings Arsenal have ever had. And hero, I'm torn between two. So I'm going to say Ramsey, no shock there. And also Lacazette. I think Lacazette, at times, absolutely rescued us from games. I think some of the stuff that he did was he carried the team at certain times. And for that, he has to get definitely a pat on the back, because he has definitely brought us out of dark times, very, very dark times. And, little things that he does, little touches, little flicks that he does, he's rescued us. And again, Aaron Ramsey's just been brilliant. You know, I can't praise Aaron Ramsey enough for coming in at halftime against Spurs and changing the game for us, because without him, we won. I personally think we'd have lost that game. I really do. So for me, Ramsey and Lacazette.
I agree with Lacazette, mate. Well played.
Yeah.
Jace, should we just write Ramsey down and move on?
I'm not going to do villain, okay? Because I look at it, okay, I don't think anybody goes out to try to be bad, and I just think the unfortunate season, I think it's Socrates. If you compare the stats between him and Mustafi, clearances, headed clearances, etc., Mustafi beats him hands down. Who's cost us more goals? Socrates. That penalty he gave away against Mohamed Salah at Liverpool, he didn't hack him in the box once, three times he had to give the penalty away. And, you know, he was at fault for at least two of those goals. But to be fair, he doesn't hide and he keeps on going. I do agree with Carl. Mustafi's had one of those horror seasons where I think at that point now, we're at that point now where the fans are against him. He's the boo boy. Even when he plays well, one little slip and, oh no, you know, we're at that point. It's best for everyone to part ways. It's unfortunate, but, you know, when you look at the stats, I tell you what, those Premier League stats, they don't lie. You know, they do not lie. So what is the other centre-half doing, if you know what I mean? As for hero, we all know what I'm going to pick. It's not rocket science, is it?
No, it's Aubameyang. Yes, it. Right, let's move on.
I forgot to say my enemy, my bad one was Ozil. Josh. Oh, Jace, were you going to say something before? Something, Jace, then ask Josh what his choices are.
Sorry, the great Mesut Ozil debate, Josh. Give us your hero and villain, and then let's get into the great Mesut Ozil debate.
Okay. My hero is, and always will be, Alex
Ellis.
Alex Iwobi.
Oh. Jesus,
that's a fair shout.
From the season he had compared to the season before, he's one of the few that has grown under Unai Emery.
It's a massive improvement.
I think, absolutely. He is our second to highest assists for the season. Joint with Lacazette, and I think it was for, oh no, sorry, Lacazette was top. If I remember rightly, it is Kolasinac. Yeah, Lacazette with 13 assists. Iwobi with 9. Kolasinac with 9. Aubameyang with 8. I think in terms of, well, some guy called Aaron Ramsey's only got 8. 6 goals. 6 goals as well. Same as Iwobi.
You can keep hoping him. He's not going to fall for it. He's not having it.
No, it's all right. One of them has won the war of staying at Arsenal next season.
Oh, God.
Yes.
Somebody's grown a pair.
Yeah, I know, right? It's because he's gone now, so I can't. He can't prove me wrong next season. but yeah, that's, I think, in terms of just, like, as I said, an improvement of a player that we've seen this season. In terms of a villain, I would say his opposite number on the other side, Mkhitaryan. In terms of, if you wanted a player to step up, you know, Mesut Ozil, will get to the fact that he nearly went missing for the entire podcast, that he was out of, you know, he was having his issues with Unai or somebody at the club, I don't know, playing football. That might have been his issue. The fact that Mkhitaryan didn't step up to that, because he has all the attributes in terms of the legs for it. We've seen that he can do a press. He's been in a Klopp's Dortmund. He is good enough to do that kind of stuff. And just seeing some of the performances he put in was just excruciatingly painful to see. Come on, you've got, I think you just see from the opposite number, a guy arguably struggling, a young player struggling, still puts in 6 goals, 9 assists in Alex Iwobi, but he shouldn't be the main creative outlet. And I think we all said pre-pod that, you know, he's a squad player for us. That's one of the things about Arsenal, is we've got a player like that that is in our squad week in, week out, when arguably he shouldn't. And I think Mkhitaryan, for the fact that he had the chance to grab the chance to be the number one playmaker at Arsenal, easily could have taken it and just didn't. It leaves so much annoyance with me, especially at his age. You know, he could be perfect and hold this position for a couple of seasons. You know, you'd see potentially Mesut move out. The fact we brought in Denis Suarez as well in January just shows he wasn't pulling his weight. That Unai thought above centre-back, we needed another creative outlet because we had this issue with Mkhitaryan and Iwobi not creating enough for us. And I think, for me, it's Mkhitaryan.
When you look at the talent he's got what he actually shows, it's damning, isn't it?
I think that's where the frustration is, fundamentally. Because you say all the villains, really, with us, none of them are bad players, you know? But we've paid millions of pounds for any of these players. So they're not going to be rubbish. These aren't, you know, Johnny Go Lucky, we were down at, you know, Sunday League and plopped this guy for 50 quid. These are serious players that have come here. They're obviously good. One, you know, Mustafi, World Cup winner. He's got talent in there somewhere and he's just not realised it for this season. And that's where most of the frustration is. You know, Mustafi came straight in, and how many games did we go unbeaten with him at Cos at the back?
17.
Yeah. So he was obviously good, you know, for a bit. And where's that gone? Where's it gone? Because Cos isn't the best centre-back in the world to have carried a defence for 17 games whilst he has a break in next to it.
Decision-making. You know, it's just decision-making.
Luck. That's not getting lucky with your decisions. There's consistency there. And I think that's what kind of got to me with that.
But players are allowed to lose it. And I guess that's a segue onto the Ozil thing. Like, everyone hails Mesut Ozil, oh, he's the best number 10 in the world. He's this, this, that. Players are allowed to deteriorate. And I think that's the problem with Arsenal. We're holding on to the Real Madrid Ozil, the Ozil that came in like at the beginning of his career, Arsenal career. Everyone's thinking that he's still that player. He's not anymore. He's not that good anymore. And we kind of have to accept it, not just Ozil as well, because we are talking about him right now, but across the board, everyone's talking about, oh, Mustafi is this, that. Someone's price tag doesn't determine how good they actually are. It doesn't. It's ridiculous because Rob Holding, we bought him for 2 million. Rob Holding is more than a £2 million player. So for me, players are allowed to decline. Mesut Ozil has declined loads. He has, no matter what, no matter how you paint the picture, he's not as good as he is. Arsenal at present do not have the luxury to allow a player in the squad to swan around the pitch, to play in just in the middle and not go wide, not go left, not make a tackle and just receive the ball and pass it and do nothing else. We don't have that luxury. We don't have the players. We don't have the other 10 players around us to allow Mesut Ozil to play this quote-unquote free role. And for me, Mesut Ozil has been living off, you know, he's the greatest number 10 thing for a while now. He's not. We don't have, like I said, we don't have the luxury to just play a number 10. Mesut Ozil needs to play as a wide left or wide right and drift in and out and sometimes run back. He needs to do that. And someone would tell him, someone would come up with some stats that, oh, but Mesut Ozil's run like 25 miles in the game. But he may have run 25 miles. But, fine. But what's he done running? Exerting energy for no reason. Like, for me, you're the quote-unquote greatest number 10 in the world and you've only got, what, 7 assists this season, did you say, Josh?
Oh, that's a good question. Let me get back up. I think it's a little fewer than that for Mesut Ozil.
Or something.
3 assists, 6 goals.
So you're the best, meant to be the best number 10 in the world, and you've only got 3 assists. And people say, oh, but he never played that many games under the Unai. But the games that you did play, why did you not make an impact? Like us right now, we can all say that the Leicester game was the standout performance of the season. He played brilliantly in that game. But what else did he do for the rest of the season? Like, what else has Mesut Ozil done? And for me, I think a lot of people, a lot of fans just are holding on to this. Oh, well, he was brilliant. Like, he used to be good. Yes, he did used to be good, but not anymore. And we can't have this luxury of paying him that amount of money. And I hate bringing this up about money, but Mesut Ozil being in our squad is stopping us from having at least 3 other players in our squad that could do the job that he's doing.
Carl, there's a question for you, though, okay? You know my views on Mesut, okay? But when you look at it, is the style of play that Unai gets all his width from the wing backs or the full backs, okay? That's where we get all the width from, okay? But we don't put runners through the middle for him. And whenever Mesut seems to... I know that Leicester game, he didn't have runners coming up the middle either. Okay, he didn't. I thought he played well in the Liverpool game as well. But unless you've got runners coming up the middle, okay, creating space, allowing him to, you know, to penetrate, do you think he's kind of flogging a dead horse and just thought, this is pointless? Because I kind of felt towards the end of the season that Unai had kind of lost the players a lot, you know? But it's just an opinion that I've got at the moment.
But you can't play to... If what you do, the team doesn't like, then you have to play to the team's strength. We can't play to Mesut Ozil's strengths. If you have to adapt, we can't all think, oh, because Mesut Ozil is the greatest number 10, we've got to have runners for him, to him to be the creative force that he is. We then have to think about, okay, you know what? We don't have the players that run off and do this and do that. Then we need to adapt to what we've got. We need to play to the team's strength, not just one person's strengths, right? Or am I...
No. I think there's a flip side to the coin where the coach has to get the best of the players and the players have to do the best for the team. Yeah, you know, I mean, it's a bit of a catch-22 at times. I don't know. Josh, what do you think?
I was going to pass it over to David. You know, we scored goals with Mesut Ozil and we scored goals without him. What are his kind of thoughts on him, not only this season, but in general?
You're on mute, David. You are still on mute, David. Danny, you go. You give us off your thoughts on the bit as well.
I think Dave's unmuting it, and it's just not unmuting at your end, Dave. Well, if Dave does unmute, we can hear him, then I'll stop. But in my thoughts on Ozil are, he is one of the greatest players in the world when he was at that top level. He's done it all with Real Madrid. He's won the World Cup. Maybe it might be the curse of winning the World Cup. But if you're as good a player as all these Real Madrid fans who now support Arsenal think he still is, then you would adapt your game. But there again, I can also see Jason's point of view. You're going to get bugger all out of a game if you play... Oh, Dave's unmuted himself. If you're going to get bugger all out of a game, if you have Xhaka and Torreira in central midfield giving you the ball, because that's not their job. Xhaka is taking pot shots from the halfway line like a free kick taker in the NFL. And if you need one of those two and you need a Ramsey, you give those two break up play, give it to Ramsey. Ramsey does the skill, gives it to Ozil. Ozil then creates goals for everyone else. We're missing that link in the middle, aren't we, Dave?
I think that's probably a fair point. Can you hear me now?
Yep.
Good stuff. I think he's been a very good signing for us up until this season. I don't think we've got the best. Well, there's no question we haven't got the best out of him this season. I think there's been something in the relationship between him and Emery that owes a great deal to the relationship that Emery had with Neymar at PSG. And Emery felt he needed to make something of an example of the guy. And I think when he's brought him back, you're right, Leicester, he was outstanding. I think there have been other games where he's produced absolutely superb performances. But you look towards the end of the season, and the perfect example is the Europa League final. If you go back and look at that again, if you can face it, I certainly can't. But from the first minute to when he came off, Ozil was all over Jorginho like a rash. And he was doing the job that Aaron Ramsey did on Jorginho when we humiliated Chelsea at our place. The difference between the two players is that Rambo has the engine to go on when Jorginho's not involved to go and make the difference in the league game. Ozil was just having to stay with him, didn't have the engine. He made one or two decent moves in the first half, but he ran out of steam. And that was when Joe Willock came on and everybody said, well, actually, look at Joe Willock. He's done a great job compared to what Ozil did for the 75 or whatever it was minutes before him. Ozil had done what he was told to do by Unai Emery. And that actually isn't his strength. It's my take as a Joe nobody.
But Dave, right? Do you think when he did have the ball, okay, right, there are no runners coming for him whatsoever, okay? We know that the strikers have pulled us through the two Valencia ties, in all fairness. The rest of the team was awful. Okay. Yeah. But when he did have the ball, there was no ambition in what he did. And that's the thing, you know. I remember from the first time seeing Mesut Ozil and thinking, wow, what a player. You know, that World Cup in South Africa, he was magnificent. Do you know what I mean? Full of intent, full of ambition in his play. And this season, and to be fair, last season as well, I don't think you can excuse him for last season that much, but that seems to have left his game. You know, even though he hasn't got runners, there's the issue that, you know, he's not looking forward or looking up and trying to, you know, wondering who's coming through. It's just a case of, I'm just laying it off for the wide men to get it and kind of going through the motions. Am I being unfair there?
I'd argue with you about last season, Jace. I thought he was a player last season. I think what's happened to him is what happened last summer, and the reaction that he has received from Germany has shaken him to his very core. I have to be very careful about how I phrase what's happened to him since. But I think he has other issues that we should be more sympathetic to if we knew for sure that was what it was. But the backlash to him from the German football authorities, from the people who are not from his locality, where all of the Turks live. I think it's been an impact. It's had a great impact on him. And I may be wrong, and if I am, I take it all back. But I think we've seen a shadow of the Mesut this year for other reasons than footballing reasons. And
I'm not sure I'm right to say, wasn't he sort of Germany's player of the year for like 6 or 7 seasons on the trot?
Absolutely. And for him to take the stick he took last year because they were crap in the World Cup, it wasn't because he was crap. It was because they were crap as a team.
Yeah, the whole squad wasn't right. And I just think that he didn't get the backing that he expected. And I truly think that, you know, at Arsenal, he was kind of sheltered because, you know, let's face it, Arsene Wenger definitely used to shelter him and cradle him a little bit. He, just like with Ramsey going up to Unai and saying, I'm fit, I want to play, apparently, I think definitely Ozil used to go to Arsene and say, I don't want to play this game. I don't want to travel up to Stoke and Hull and all the rest of them. And I think he did used to get away with it. And whereas probably Unai's come in and said, I'm not going to treat you like that, I think he's got a bit of a shell shock to him. You know, he was actually been cotton wool by Arsenal to an extent. And I think because he didn't have that back end anymore, he has definitely taken his toll and it shocked him a little bit. And we're not seeing the player that we once saw when he first joined Arsenal. And we are where we are with that.
Carl, let me pick up on something there. I have a bit of privilege in that I get up to Colney on occasion and I see the reaction of the other players to him. And it is kind of heartwarming. And I don't want to go any further, deeper than that, other than they obviously have the highest regard for him. And I get the feeling this year or this season that they have been trying to lift him a great deal. And I'll leave it there.
I think teamwork is important and you've got to feel loved in the surroundings that you are. Like any job, I'm sure all of us, if we went to work every day and we didn't get on with our colleagues, it would be a toxic environment. I think work is also better when you do have your colleagues around you and you feel better. Like there's certain people that I work with and I'm like, yes, I'm working with so-and-so person today and I know I'm going to have a good day because of the rapport and the banter you have with that certain player. And we try and lift Mesut Ozil all we can. And it's great. I think it's absolutely great that the squad hasn't tried to freeze him out. Sorry. I think that's absolutely brilliant. It just shows the camaraderie and the team around Mesut Ozil is brilliant. But, and I hate to go back to the negative thing, but it can only go so far. If you're trying to lift him up and saying, Mesut, you're the best. Mesut, you're brilliant. Mesut, we love you. You know, we're trying to make him play better and we're still getting the performances that we've got this season, then what more can you do?
That's true. Danny, should we go over to listeners' questions? I think we've got a couple.
We have. They have been pouring in an alarming... No, actually, we've got 3. You lazy, lazy bastards. How dare you?
That's how many people are watching this.
Yeah. There's actually none watching it, but yeah. Okay,
it's not me asking them to vote for me because I'm more than 3 behind, Chris.
How did that happen?
I don't know. I think Chris is rigging it. There's all I'm going to say is for the ABW member that you love the most. Most of Chris's votes are all coming from Radio Carolina, and we all know that's because they're on a boat somewhere. I'm trying to think who to give that. Oh, we go, Carl.
Pirates.
Go on, who was going to say that? Because I'm not looking at you. I'm looking at my notes. Who was going to say something?
Don't worry. Keep going. Okay.
Right, Carl. Start with you from @Marbles. _TV. It's a two-parter. He says, how much time do we give Emery to improve the defence and is our crap defending based on weak midfield positioning as much as shit defenders? Carl, mate, help me.
Right, we have to give him this season, definitely. In the summer, he has to improve and it depends on the funds and the personnel that leaves as well. I think it's very important. Yes, I do think that because the defenders don't get the cover from the midfield, I do think it exposes our defenders much, much more. So, yes, we need to give them this season. And yes, it is definitely our midfield that doesn't help our defenders.
Jolly good. Right, there's only two more, so I'm going to give one to Josh and one to Mr. Hollick. One for you, Mr. Hollick, a man who is, much like you, a season... I think you were a season ticket holder, weren't you? Or you still are?
I'm packing mine up this year.
Oh, that's what I thought. So, at Rich, B-E-C-K-E-R-S, I have just cancelled my season ticket after losing my love for the club. Have any of you lost your love for the club before and then got back into it? I know your situation is slightly different. Do you want to answer the question and maybe talk about yours, or just answer the question? Yeah, it's up to you.
Absolutely. I'm never going to lose my love for the club. It's kind of ingrained deeply into me. But I am absolutely livid at the fact that we have gradually moved from a Saturday 3 o'clock to a Saturday 3 o'clock and Sunday 4 o'clock, which was okay. I understand television wants to pay good money to enhance the game, if you like, and the clubs benefit from it. But we're now in a situation where we're playing Sundays and Thursdays. We're playing on Monday nights. We're playing on Friday nights. Next season, we go to Saturday nights. And if you live out in the sticks where I do, night games are an absolute pain in the neck. And so last season, we got the stage where I don't actually know how many home games I saw. And it's cost me dear over the last couple of seasons. And I'm not prepared to put up with it anymore, particularly as I have a silver and a red membership where I can pick and choose the games. I'm still going to come to the weekend games. I still love the club, but I'm not going to put myself out any longer because of television.
Yeah, it's a sad time when you have to make this. When I stopped going, I went from my first game is in 87 and my last game is in 2008. And I went for virtually 20 seasons, almost every home game. I missed that a couple of seasons because I fell out of my old man. And then until I started driving, and it's you do get fed up of the monotony of, I mean, it takes me 2.5 hours to get there. 2 hours to get there, 2 to 3, 4 hours to get back. And it's just in freezing cold. And I thought the amount of effort I'm putting into, money didn't concern me. It's the amount of effort and time I was putting into. And for the first season, the Emirates had 4 season tickets and we were so shit. I struggled. That was in 2000, our first season there. I couldn't get people to come with me. I used to charge people, say, look, £20, I'll come and pick you up, take you to the ground, drop you off, and then bring you back home again. Still couldn't get people to come with me. That's how fickle Arsenal fans have become, because we were spoiled, weren't we, with the early years of Wenger. We were spoiled, and I just thought, I mean, I've said it 100 times, that League Cup final against Chelsea, the best Chelsea team of a generation, and we played our kids. I thought, I've gone all the way to bloody Wales, as much as I think Cardiff is a lovely place, lovely stadium, lovely people. Steady, Jason.
Correct answer.
It is lovely. And I just thought, I've gone to all this effort and they can't be bothered. And then I could see the transfer market, the way it was going. I could see us selling all of our best players. And I didn't fall out of the club. I just got disillusioned with what we were meant to become. And up until now, we've not become it, have we? Anyone else want to say anything on that?
Oh, yeah, sorry, Dan. Well, there's a whole other side to it, Dan, from my point of view as well, because I've been going, everybody knows, since the 60s. And my dad had a season ticket for donkey's years at Highbury in the East Lep. Well, he had two because obviously he wanted to take me. And then when the 70s and 80s came around, I ended up being a travel club steward as well because, well, let's not go into the because. And you get to the situation where now, when season tickets are an offer, I've been on the season ticket waiting list since I don't know when. And 2 years ago, they came on and said, you're at the top of the season ticket waiting list, but hey, it's club level. Last year, it's upper tier. Well, I've been in lower tier for a while now, and I want lower tier tickets, otherwise it's no point to me. And there's, you know, you get no, I'm being so kind of self-entitled here, but there isn't that kind of acknowledgement of the amount of time that you've been supporting the club.
You've become a number, not a person.
Yeah, absolutely.
Indeed. But good news, people. Sian is now 21, as she was last week. I insured her on my van, on the Volkswagen Charan, the Silver Beast. And so this beginning of the season, we're going to go to some games. She's going to drive me. If we make it to the game, we don't end up bloody upside down in a river somewhere. But yeah, we're going to go. It's all on. It's on, Jace. It's on. We nip over to Wales and pick you up.
It's okay, pal. I'll catch you back.
I'll come with you.
Right. I would say on the flip side, I will probably be going to more games this season because I'm better placed in the country for away fixtures. And the away fixtures where we've seen the... there's kind of, it's 30 quid to get in, which is still a lot of money for a football game, but far more palatable than a trip down to London and everything that goes with that kind of stuff. I'm just being, I've got Manchester Liverpool on my doorstep. That's four fixtures already that are far more accessible than even just being down where I was on the South Coast, getting through London to get to the Arsenal. It's just always been a pain through Southern, and it's just something that now I can do. And to be honest, I will be attending more games because it's
£26, Josh, because the club are still subsidizing. They're bloody brilliant like that. I appreciate that.
The problem is that, Richard said, he's fallen out of love with it. You do become disillusioned at times. I get it with people. You do become disillusioned at times. And it's just that side of, it's a shame that it gets to that, isn't it? We all go through that's what sport is. It's the roller coaster. It's the roller coaster of emotions. And unfortunately, because the football hasn't been great, there's nothing to hang your hat on this season. And it's difficult.
Right. Final question from Matt LR28 for you, Josh. I'm not sure you'll be able to answer all of this, but we're slim pickings. He says, who would you like to see next season go out on loan from the academy graduates, and who would you bring up to fill the first team squad positions? I think he's on about, players, don't you? Your favourite bloke who ruled Germany last season. What's his name?
Oh, what, Reece Nelson? Reece Nelson could do with another loan. I think Nketiah goes out on loan as well. In terms of players we can bring in, Osi Tutu. I can't remember. I think we could see a bit of him next season, certainly in the Europa League. John Jules, the Ministry of Sounds. Again, another potential. I think it depends on the Lacazette-Aubameyang situation. I'm sure those two players... time at the club will be tested with various different rumours for which super club wants to come in for them. But I think if we've got an opportunity, especially with Welbeck going out, I think we could see a young striker having more opportunities next season. And yeah, I think otherwise it's Willock. I think Willock could really have it's probably his time. I've been impressed with what he's done, albeit a 5-minute cameo against a Chelsea side that had already won the competition by the time he turned on the field. And I think, who's the one? Is it Amici?
Yeah.
The winger. Yeah, Xavier Amici. I think he's the one from the wingers with the kind of highest ceiling in terms of potential. I think he's one to watch out for next season. But again, as David alluded to, it's with Freddie coming in onto the having a bigger role in the club, I think he'll be the man that will help push through these players and help Unai supplement his squad where necessarily the transfer market can't do that for him.
And there is one other player that is my tip for next season. Arthur Okonkwo is only 17 years old. He's not 18 until September. He's our goalkeeper. I think he's 6'4", 6'5". He's played 4 under-23 games, kept 3 clean sheets. Absolutely magnificent. And that is the kind of young player we've got coming through. And we've got so many of them. But here, I think it'd be interesting to see what we do with the goalkeeper situation, because I don't think Iliev is going to make it. And the bloke, Martinez, might be coming in as backup. And I think Ospina has already said he's going. But like you were saying, Josh, there's so many really good players, but we're losing quite a few. Cohen Bramall's gone. Julio Unpronounceable is gone. Our only Scottish player, Charlie Gilmore, has been released. And there, I think there's a few others that have gone as well. So there's going to be a bit of a shake. And it looks like Freddie Ljungberg might be coming first team coach and replacing Steve Bold. He's going to go back to working with the kids. So either way, it's going to be an interesting season next season. What do we do next, Josh?
I was going to say, let's go quickly for our thoughts for next season. Jace, quick predictions for next season?
Lots can depend on transfer window and who we bring in and who we ship out. I'm not hopeful. I can't see us making Champions League next season. I think sixth would be the best we finish.
Okay. Carl?
Again, like Jason said, I think it depends on the transfer window. As is right now, like Jason, six.
David, are you going to go with what you went with last season? And if you do, I'm going to agree with you for your thought.
Ask me in August, but I still think third or fourth, because I think Tottenham are now going to start to suffer the real pain of having moved to a new stadium that has cost a lot more money than they had budgeted for. And I think that Chelsea have got another new manager to bed in. So I'm quite happy about third or fourth.
Danny?
I predict Jason will have a nervous breakdown by about November with the number of games he's going to have to do. So it's going to be an interesting season. It all depends on whether we sell our assets to bolster the squad where we need it. Looks like Aubameyang has been linked with China, Barcelona. I mean, Atletico and Barcelona, I think they want Lacazette. But like David said, you can't really tell anything until August. Once that transfer window closes, then I think we can all make a better judgment. But it's going to be an interesting season and we're not going to win anything. We could even get to the final again of the Europa League, but again, Man United are in it as well. I think a lot depends on whether the transfer bans stick for Chelsea and Man City and other things like that. How about you, Josh? What's your prediction?
Third in Europa League final. Again, same as I said last season. Most of the reasons David said as well. And I think Europa League, we've seen consistently we can get to at least the semi-finals. It purely depends on what drops down from the Champions League. But again, where we're at the moment, it's the summer that will dictate purely where we did it. But if we see no ins and outs and we just did a Spurs and not buy anyone and not sell anyone, I could see a similar performance. Again,
I got to be honest. One thing I would say, I hope I'm wrong. I'm bang wrong. You know, I hope Unai proves me a mug. I'd love it. I'd absolutely love it. But I just don't see it. I don't have any faith in Raul. I don't have any faith in Unai.
And on that note...
All right, let's end it on at least.
This has been a cheery lesson.
It's a positive. So let's everyone, and this is to every panel, one positive. We know all the negatives for this season. We've done all that. One positive for this season or last season. What's one positive? Go for you, Danny. What's one positive from this season?
Erdogan being at Ozil's wedding. He's going to tempt him to come and play for any bloody team in Turkey.
Sake.
There you go.
Dave, one positive from this season.
We can't hear you, Dave. Doesn't even say
Rob Holding's performances in the first half of the season until he got injured.
Okay, cool. Josh, one positive from this season.
I've already mentioned his name about six times already, so I can't say Alex Iwobi, can I?
You can say he's golden in Europa League.
I said positive from this season.
You know what? I was on the toilet when he did that, so I didn't even see it. I didn't even see Alex Iwobi's goal. But no, I think the some of the youth players that we saw come through, I think there's some real promise there and showing that Arsenal's youth academy is great again.
Okay, and come on, Jace, give me a positive from this season. You've got at least one in you.
Hector Bellerin's return to sort of good form, because I thought he suffered last season. And I thought, under Unai, he looked a lot sharper this season. I'll give you another one. Bernd Leno.
I thought you were going to say you found out Juventus do a 5XL shirt.
Look, mate, when it comes to 5XL shirts, you need to be quiet.
You sent me one and it doesn't fit. I haven't paid you for that yet. Shh, no one mentioned it.
No, you haven't. He turned around. He said, I sent him a black T-shirt. And he said, oh, yeah, I want a red one. I thought, oh, shit. Okay, so I got red ones. Okay. And, of course, the largest they do is 5XL. They don't do 6XL. They only do 6XL in black. I look like the Michelin man, he said.
Don't fat shame me.
You said it.
So when okay. you go down, you down to Millet for the weekend, then, Jace, get him another one.
I'm going to tell you what, mate, okay? I don't think they do tents that big.
Wow.
I think we need to
on that. That's yes.
Before you round it up, Josh, just want to say, people, go and look at our website or look at our tweets, because then you can go and vote for all kinds of categories: goal of the season, game of the season, guest of the season. We've got no journo of the season and no ex pro of the season, because we've decided that it's just going to be us all season. And yeah, and also you can vote for your favourite ABW member. Chris is rigging it though, but David and Steve, they're coming up on the outside. They're playing the long game. So, yeah, go and vote. It's really important. We're doing a live show Wednesday.
Vote for Chris Jason and John Walsh, who do all the bloody work that me and Chris don't.
You'll be here next season, though, Dave, yet to do more live shows. That's the upside. Right, go on, Josh.
So I was going to say, if anybody's got any quick shout-outs.
I've got one. Our wonderful listeners.
Danny, you're my shout-out.
Oh, Jason, you're my shout-out. Fat shamer.
Are we all hands?
No, I know where your hands have been. Right. And she said you were terrible.
Not the first.
No, I said, Mother, I don't need to know where his hands have been.
Josh, end the show, please.
Danny, I'm either going to say goodbye to the listeners or you can just turn this off. I'm not sure. But no, I would say a thank you to all of the listeners for this season. And we will be back next season. And as you say, Danny, on Wednesday, we're recording live the awards show. So if you are going to vote and you're listening to this on Thursday, it's too late because we've already done it. So all of those votes for Josh will be in vain. But thank you very much to all my guests as well. It has been a pleasure herding these cats this evening that are you lot. And Danny, turn this
shit off.
Yes! Yes!